Open the House Committee on Agriculture, Natural Resources, and Rural Communities. It's Tuesday, April 21st, OSU Day at the Capitol. Thank you very much. You just quack at me.
Yes, I did.
My goodness. So we're going to start with a variety of things that are being moved over, and then we'll get into the public hearings. We've got quite a few sign-up sheets on 3072. So I'm going to start with by carrying over a work session on House Bill 2999, Pesticide Use Reporting. One additional minor amendment that is needed, and it's carried over to Tuesday morning, April 23rd, and carry over the work session on House Bill 2219, the landowner preference, to Tuesday, 4/28. Our amendments are not yet ready. I'm going to open a public hearing on HJR 35, the Federal Forest Lands Advisory Committee. We don't have too many folks on that, so I think we can hear that bill and ask Marvin Brown to come up, and then next after Marvin will be Samantha Chirillo. Is that close? Chirillo. Thank you. From Cascadia Rising Tide.
Thank you, Chair Clem, members of the committee. I'm Marvin Brown, State Forester. And I think you are getting a copy of the Federal Forest Advisory Committee report, the final copy. It's being handed out now. And I just want to say I really appreciate the fact that this joint resolution is coming forward. It was, I think, really good work on the part of a very diverse group of folks to come up with a consensus set of agreements around what they feel like Oregon should be promoting in the way of the future of federal forest in the state. We are getting some traction with that report. there's an implementation group that has formed, and under the guidance of the Oregon Consensus Center, and that group includes the Nature Conservancy, the Oregon Business Council, Oregon Forest Resources Institute, the Department, ODF&W, DEQ, and all those entities have come together with a cooperative agreement on how they're going to go forward with those. With the implementation of the report. But I think that's about all I'll say. I hope you pass it out, and I think it's really good work.
Any questions from Marvin? We had a discussion about this early in session briefly as part of a larger panel. Representative Gillamy, are you okay?
I'm all right. Just your shirt is like...
Oh.
This way then.
Oh!
Sorry.
All right. I think you did your job before, and we'll read the report. Obviously, a lot of time and care was spent by the committee, and so we'll trust that they did good work and hear from maybe one person who has some concerns about it, I think, if my sheet is marked correctly. So please join us. Yes. Welcome.
Yes. Hi. My name is Samantha Chirillo. I'm from Lane County. Live in Eugene. I'm not representing, but I'm with the group Cascadia Rising Tide, and it prioritizes climate and economic security for all Oregonians. I'm also an organizer of a forest coalition in Western Oregon, and I just received my master's degree in public policy from the University of Oregon. I took the community planning workshop, so I'll talk a little bit later about the Tillamook Forest Bill. For now, the HJR 35 approves the Federal Forest Advisory Committee recommendations, and which include turning over federally managed lands to the state. Now, this is problematic because the state does not yet have a public involvement process. There was a bill this session to create one, but it doesn't have one yet. And the NEPA process at the federal level, while inadequate, it provides a timeline and actually is a process. Furthermore, the Federal Forest Advisory Committee recommendations greenwash logging to reduce fire risk. Now, there is a real lack of strong scientific support for either the ecological or climate impacts of such forest management. There's some evidence to show that it can actually increase fire risk in some cases, and it certainly degrades waterways if not done very carefully. Also greenwashes depletion of our forests to meet our enormous energy demand by removing forest biomass for electricity and liquid fuel. So those are the concerns I have about the recommendations. I understand that a lot of you really think it's a great set of recommendations, but I think there are a lot of problems that will come to light, and I realize it's non-binding, so I appreciate your attention.
Well, just one moment. I know you're going to be back, but it's important, I think, for people who come from the public to know that we do listen and that we do have open minds. When a group spends a lot of time on a recommendation, you know, we take it seriously, and it's non-binding, but it's something that a lot of other citizens who are volunteers spend a lot of time on. And I think, you know, there is a public process on the way state forests are managed. We're about to have a big public hearing on it. The Board of Forestry has public hearings when they make changes to plans, and there are citizens who participate. I know it's not NEPA, but it is a process, and if there's a way we need to improve it, you know, I think we're open to that. That's the only response. And thank you for coming. And I'm sorry that you had to come on OSU Day where we've got our nasty little signs out there. There is a Masters of Public Policy seminar at noon I'm going to go to out there to see if maybe I could go to it. But if you tell me U of O is better, maybe you could convince me. I don't think so, but maybe you could convince me. That's where I ought to be.
Okay,
thank you very much. Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing on HJR 35. Going to open a work session on HJR 35.
Mr. Chair, I move HJR 35 to the floor and be adopted at the recommendations.
Representative Krieger moves HJR 35 to the floor with a do adopt recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Shoffler.
Contrary to some of the excellent testimony, I don't think the federal government manages their property at all. This state does a far better job, and especially in light of this economy, we can't afford not to take advantage of our precious resources that we've been blessed with in this state, whether it be for lumber or paper or for potential sustainable fuel resources. This is the federal government. Hopefully will start listening to us. If they don't, we're just going to sit and watch these forests burn and rot and wreak havoc and damage, irreparable damage to life and property here in this state. And it's incredibly wasteful, criminal, and irresponsible not to allow the good people of this state who know how to manage these lands back onto our own property.
Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know there's much to say after that, but that's why I've been able to be rather quiet most of the time. But I spent 6 years on the Board of Forestry, 5 on OWEB, 4 on the Forestry Industries Council on Taxation in D.C., managed my own forest land for the last 32 years. We do it, and most private landowners do it very responsibly. We're using adaptive management as the new sciences tell us what to do. And down the in my country, we had the Biscuit Fire. If that was private land, we would be in violation of the Forest Practices Law because of the mismanagement on those forest lands. And I spent 28 years with the state police out there doing that, traveling in that back country. And if you go look at the federal lands down in Curry County, it's atrocious, the condition they're in, and nothing's being done about it. And they will burn again, and we'll be losing water values, the very thing we talk about for anadromous fish, because of the improper management, which includes planting trees, which they're not doing. The same people who have said they don't want the Biscuit Fire planted are the same people that are over here on the Tillamook Forest saying they don't want it cut and it was planted. You can't have it both ways.
Representative Whitney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I spent some time of my life living in Central Washington and learned a great deal about the natural resources at that time. Most of what I understand about farming and agriculture and natural resources and fish issues comes from my time there. Probably one of the more interesting experiences I had was an opportunity given to me to go up a few thousand feet in an airplane and begin flying over some vast stretches of land in the area. And I was asked to in my own opinion, what land I thought looked like it was in the best condition and what land looked like it needed help or had maybe been neglected. And as it began to point it out, as a novice myself, I was informed that the land that I thought was in need of help was the government-owned land, and the land that looked like it was in the best condition was the privately controlled land. And it was an awakening for me about how badly managed our federal forests are. And I have I've been in a number of them up and down the Cascade Range, and I just want to echo the sentiments that it is so frustrating I can't even get angry about it anymore. At some point you become numb to how badly served the rural communities are by the policies that have been implemented. And if this is just one small step in advancing that, then I'm happy to do that today.
My comments are just, I think, geared at what's on this piece of paper, these recommendations. You know, I'm looking at, I don't know why, I opened it to page 32. The overall strategy is to take action to improve forest health. The governor and state legislature should create a federal forest land liaison program to facilitate and support federal agency and local community efforts to improve forest health. Two, they should assist federal agencies in providing administrative, financial, and technical resources to local collaborative partnerships to build trust and help identify scientifically informed and socially acceptable forest management. Three, local collaborative groups in cooperation with state and federal agencies should first assess forest health and then plan projects at the landscape scale. So I mean, I hear a lot of collaboration, a lot of local involvement, and, you know, I grew up in one of these towns, and for a long time, only the economy won. It was just the economy that won. And now, for a long time, only the environment has won. And neither of those two, those are false choices. You can't do both. And we're at this point where our only opportunity going forward is to deal with both simultaneously. And I think that's what this report embodies. And there's not going to be another moment like this for a long time. Representative Edwards, would you like to come up and talk about your bill? I'm sorry I didn't see you here.
No, I'd just like the opportunity to carry the bill
on
the floor.
Fantastic.
I have one thing.
Oh, Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair Clem, even though you're wearing orange shirt today. One of the most interesting things since I have been here, I think, 13 weeks now? I have been introduced to a new animal. It's called the push-me-pull-you. And I think that one of the things that Representative Wingard point out is the situations we get into when we're playing with the animal, push me, pull you, and how policies and decisions are constantly changed because of elected or policymakers. But I think that, for me, this is simply a statement supporting the findings, and I think it's a wise thing for us to do.
Thank you. Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Byer?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative Groveland?
Aye.
Representative Chocolate?
Aye.
Representative Winger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Van Orn?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Krieger? Aye. Motion passes. The bill, H.J.R. 35, is adopted. Representative Chris Edwards will be here. going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2216. Marvin, would you like to come up?
Thank you, Chair Clem. Again, for the record, I'm Marvin Brown, Director of the Department of Forestry. Doug Decker is also with me, who's been the project manager working on land acquisition for the department. The bill was introduced early in the session and had a hearing. There were some policy issues brought up during that hearing, and we also indicated that there were some technical pieces to the bill that we wanted to work on yet. I'll address a little bit of the policy piece, and then Doug can kind of summarize the technical parts of it if you're interested in that. On the policy side, obviously, what we heard from the committee was, that it's kind of hard for you all to support land acquisition unless you know that the land is going to be managed and contribute to the local communities in positive ways. And I would probably refer you to Section 7 of the bill is an amendment that was added. And how that evolved was we were actually approached by a German business called Enligna. They have indicated that they were okay with us invoking their name at this point. They have an interest in building a biomass plant in Gilchrist. It's not a final decision. It may or may not happen. I don't want to, make promises that won't come true. But they are very interested in that location as a place to build pellets. And a key part of their business model was to see that area, that land that we're interested in buying around Gilchrist, maintained as a managed forest as a source of fiber for them. And that fits extremely well with what the forest is at this point. It's a basically very young, very well-stocked forest that's going to need lots of thinning. And it's just the perfect kind of material that this forest can deliver to them. So we have approached this as a potential lottery-backed bond activity that would come under the purpose of providing economic development in that community. And Section 7 talks about the economic piece of that. And I think that creates an addition to the whole process that might be more in line with what you all were thinking. And I can answer questions on that, or I can ask Doug to go over some of the technical pieces if you like.
Any questions on this, Representative Roebling?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, as I understand this, that there will be bonds that are backed by the use of the forest. I mean, so in fact, you're going to have other funds for parts of the time, but part of the funding for the payback of the bonds will come out of resources off the forest land. Is that?
Chair Clem, Representative Roebling, and Doug may need to help me here, but as I understand it, there's a set amount of bonding capacity that's available every biennium that is intended to be paid off by lottery receipts.
Okay.
And it's dedicated to projects that affect economic development. And so given the Enligna opportunity and kind of you all's interest, we've reshaped this as a potential economic development type activity.
So from that follow-up?
Please.
So from that standpoint, the lottery would pay off the bonding. We would then own this particular piece of property. But the only reason that we would get the lottery bond is that we are doing economic development. So theoretically, there should be a nexus that shows X number of jobs are going to be created because of the acquisition, and those jobs over a period of time will create X amount of economic development for the area, and that there will be indicators that we should be meeting to really continue to qualify for those economic development bonds. Is that clear? More clearly state the issue?
Chair Clemmer, Representative Roebling, yeah, I think it does. And we've got a background memo that kind of spells out the job potential, and it's I call it a briefing memo related to the rationale for using those, you know, those lottery bonds as an economic development project. So it does have those kind of metrics in it.
Okay.
Representative Wingard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What you have is the potential for economic activity, but my experience watching many of these projects is they actually run into a lot of resistance. So I guess I'm wondering what assurances we have that this project actually goes forward. I mean, ultimately, if we pass this bill, the acquisition goes forward, but the project may not. And ultimately, then, Section 7 is to some degree irrelevant because we will have done the acquisition, but we won't necessarily have the economic activity.
Chair Clem and Representative Wingard, that's a fair question, and I can't tell you that I can't offer you absolute assurance that the project will get filled. If we're able to purchase the land under this provision, then I think we will have a pretty clear set of direction about how that forest is to contribute to economic function, regardless of whether the Enligna project goes forward or not. There still is a sawmill there in Gilchrist. There are other interests that are looking at biomass facilities that could be, potentially served by this wood fiber source. And I think the best assurance I can give you is that given the purpose under which we would buy these properties, that's what the focus would be.
Representative Verblin.
Thank you. A couple of questions. The first, that area has a fairly large deer, elk, and whatever population that roam back and forth in that area. This is part of that range. So keeping it as a package, as opposed to chopped up for housing developments, would be beneficial to wildlife in the state. Would we also maintain access for hunting and those kinds of activities on these forests?
Chair Clem and Representative Roblin, yeah, definitely.
And then the follow-up?
Yeah, follow-up.
I don't want to necessarily get into the next couple of bills, but this one begs for that in the sense that I'm hearing you say, Arundel, that we're buying this under these conditions and so on and so forth, but you really haven't come out and said the greatest permanent value of this forest under these conditions will be forestry as opposed to environment and recreation. And I don't know if you want to get there, but the words you're using about how we're going to use and access this land and that it's going to be for economic development would lend me to believe that that's kind of what the biggest value for this particular piece of property would be in the arsenal of state forestry lands. Would that be a fair statement, or you don't have to answer that. I mean, I don't want to be in too bad a position, but close would be nice.
I'll try, Chair Clam, Representative Roblin, and I guess, from my perspective, it's appropriate to look at this, the portfolio of ownerships we have, and or manage, because we don't really own the common school fund land, but we do manage it, and look at the fact that, there are slightly different twists, turns, focuses to any of those properties, depending on where they lay, what they do, and this would be a slightly different focus for this one.
Could I do one more follow-up?
Yeah, please.
Because I guess my issue is that there is a forestry department, and then there's a parks department, and parks have a different mission. They own lands and whatever, and they have a mission, I think, that's clearly not a forestry mission. It's a parks mission. And I worry that at times we combine both of those, and we want everybody to be parks and everybody to be forest, and parks kind of already has a charted-out chunk of land that we aren't going to do much because it's a park. And I clearly want to make sure that we recognize there are different aspects, and I appreciate that comment. That
Representative Schaffler, then Krieger.
Yeah, we already have plenty of parks, wilderness areas, national forests. We can't do anything in. They may as well be a park. What's the board's intention, the department's intention, you, and the governor's intention on the acquisition of this specific property we're talking about and any further acquisitions relating to this bill? Are you telling me here right now today, is it the sustainable use for wood fiber products and the production of if we go along with this bill. Because I tell you, if it's not, and if you can't say that unequivocally, then I have issues with it. I want some assurance that we're going to use that sawmill, keep that sawmill going down there, or any other industry that you can use as products. I want to hear that. I want to hear some assurance of the board, you, the department, and this governor, that that's what we're going to do when we acquire land underneath this bill. That's what I want to hear.
Another good question, Chair Clem and Representative Schaffler. The answer would be yes.
That's all I need to hear right there. You can stop.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm from the chair of the Board of Forestry, too.
No, that's okay. I heard what that's what I wanted right there.
Okay.
We'll need to call it in.
Representative Krieger.
Marvin, thank you, Mr. Chair. We've had conversations since the bill was first heard two, three times, and getting back to what Representative Schaffer said, the concern is you buy these land. I would like to see it buy it. I don't want to see it divided up and not properly managed, and fires and wells and, you know, hurting the range for wildlife. But what are the expectations of those lands? You've stated that today in our conversations. And I ask you specifically, you know, that you got to enforce management over on the Tillamook and Clatsop, and you have the, you know, the definition of the purpose of the land's rule and greatest permanent value, which is not necessarily the same which you might have over there. And you have a management plan on the east side for the Sun Pass, which is a little bit different because it's a different forest. But I had suggested clear back with the Board of Forestry when we made that change, which I did not agree with. Neither did Dick Baldwin, who was on the board at the time, agree, because we felt it would lead to what I call the environmental for-profit industry misinterpreting what we had done. And I wanted to have an intent statement of what we meant. I think the board, if we get this, needs to, Mr. Blackwell, the board, and your staff need to sit down and do an intent statement of what you intend to do with those lands besides what's in statute, because I think that reaffirms, and that's something that can be changed if conditions warrant that in the future. But it simply would make it more difficult to challenge what you're doing if you state what you intend to do and what the purpose of what you said, what you intend it to mean.
Appreciate that. President Wingard.
Feel the need to come back in on this conversation. With all due respect, the department's intentions and assurances are irrelevant. This director, the current governor, and the current board will change. They will not be there forever. They probably won't even, probably one of them be on there 10 years from now or in their positions. And at the end of the day, what we are doing with this bill is just furthering the acquisition of public lands under a system right now that I think is broken, with assurances that I don't think are worth anything. And it's not a judgment on the department as it's currently headed. It's just that when somebody new comes in with a new governor and replaces the board, they're totally free to change the direction, and the lands have been acquired. And I have zero confidence that any lands that we acquire won't ultimately be essentially put off limits and be treated like almost all the other lands are, irregardless of what people, what the local community wants, irregardless of what the current intentions of the people who passed the bill or the Board of Forestry at the time says they're going to do with it. Zero confidence.
Well, my two cents are, I think at some point here in a relatively short timeline, we're going to come up with a definition of what at least a couple forests ought to be guided by, and or at least some direction of the Board of Forestry on what the legislature thinks about that. And my intention was to try and bring an amendment to this bill that would guide for future governors and future of foresters, state foresters, that policy. Obviously, that could be changed by a state legislature in the future, too. But the relating clause actually doesn't work. The relating clause is acquisitions and not what you do with them. So we're still looking around to see if there's any other opportunities, but I wanted to have a public hearing on this concept because when you first came to us this session, Marvin, you said the greatest threat to commercial forestry is fractionalization. And I know that the intent of this program is to acquire things that would otherwise be lost to somebody who wants to have a house and 160 acres worth of trees they don't touch. Or maybe they're going to sustainably, you know, manage it. I don't know. But I've met people like that. I was going along the Umpqua River looking for a place to see if I could find for my dad to retire to. And this nice gentleman who had moved up from California to our state had acquired a piece of land and was very proud of the fact that he had bought the 300 acres also of the timber behind him and that that would never be touched. And I just thought, boy, he's not going to like it when someday that gets sick and diseased and burns down through his property and onto everybody else's if that's the way it goes. So I know the intent is about acquisition, but I, you know, in a gesture to Representative Wingert, I do think we still need to continue looking at how to guide that, at least from a legislative level, in the statute, because I don't know that everybody who inhabits these positions, you know, share that same feeling about trying to balance the needs of the state when it comes to the use of the forest. But I'm worried about fractionalization, and you know, that to me is just a great of a problem as locking it up and not doing a single thing with it, because it's happening and we can find it and we can know it, and you've told us that's a threat. So that's my two cents, and be happy to entertain anybody else. Otherwise, we'll close the... We have one more speaker, actually, David Moskowitz, I'm sorry. And Tim Josie would like to testify. Representative Roper.
Yeah, one really quick statement. You know, we passed a bill, a resolution earlier, saying that we as a state would really like to help influence the federal government and how they manage their lands. And I guess the logical conclusion to that in this kind of bill, if we acquire the land, is that maybe we need to have a resolution at the state that says we need the counties to help explain to the state how to manage their lands. Because some of our counties do a very good job with small tracts of land and the return on investment. So at some point, I guess, if I were around and I was to see us doing the same thing the federal government does, which is not try to manage our lands, then I would be looking at how do we put into statute that the state forester has to take in advice from the counties who are doing a reasonably good job of, in my opinion, managing their lands to help the state understand how they should manage their lands. So I just want to put that in order so that people understand that from my perspective, I think there are ways to do this that are beneficial for all the different uses that add value to the whole state, both at the economy level, the recreational level, and the wildlife level. And I worry when we just think about letting trees grow, that we damage the very wildlife we are also here in another agency, Fish and Wildlife, honored to protect. So we force the feeding of all the animals who like to sleep in the forest but eat in the other places. They get forced on private land to eat all the crops they have. Uh-oh, I owe you on that one.
calling,
Arnie.
Yeah.
In the OSU Scholarship Fund.
But, it's that whole we've got to keep a balance here. And I worry that different ebbs and flows cause that balance to get out of whack, and I'm a little concerned right now. When you live in these rural areas and you look at a resource that could be of value to everyone, not bringing much value to anyone, including the wildlife it's supposed to protect, who can't survive in these places any longer. So thanks.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I got a question about the funding before I ask it. It's really for you. How many more testifiers do we have for this bill?
Two.
I'll be quick. We're always going to have change, and so my only point of encouragement for my friend from Wilsonville is at least this committee is a start, and I'm encouraged by the chair's leadership on this. I share your concern for sort of the way things are going. On the other hand, I don't know how we can see the future other than just try to set a precedent here today or as we hear this bill. If we would go ahead, which I'm not inclined to do at this point, due to the discussion. What about the funding mechanism? Because lottery bonds, are we going to have somebody in from the Treasury to talk about that? Because even if we do want to go ahead, I would remind the chair of something he already knows. We're not in very good shape financially, so I'd like to know more about that as well.
Okay. We can do that when we bring it back.
Anybody else?
Okay. Thanks, Marvin. I'm going to ask David Moskowitz and Tim Josie to come up.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, my name is David Moskowitz, appearing on behalf of the Native Fish Society. We just got the amendments this morning, so I haven't looked through them. When I testified on this bill several weeks or months ago, there was a little bit of concern about some language which appears to have been removed. And so if that's the case, then we probably have nothing further, but I just haven't had a chance to read through the whole thing, and I just wanted to let people know. But it looked like the one concern I'd raised before appears to have been considered, so we appreciate that, and we'll finish reading and get back to you. Thank you.
Thanks. Welcome, Tim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tim Josie, Tillamook County Commissioner and Chair of the Trust Counties. When this bill, when we were first asked to weigh in on this proposal at the Forest Trust Lands Advisory Committee, we spent quite a bit of time talking about it. Great deal of hesitancy, but the county commissioners agreed in principle to support this legislation. And then the legislation was dropped, and we looked at it, and there were some pretty major problems with the bill. And so I solicited the certified smart person on state forest lands, Paul Levesque. He works for Tillamook County. He's written a couple of volumes on the history of state forest lands. He's my advisor and knows Chapter 530 forwards and backwards. And I looked at it, saw some problems. He looked at it and got angry. And so then we sat down and worked with the department, and there was a work group that was created. And as a result of the work group, LC was supposed to go back and rewrite some major changes. And when I heard that this bill was being heard this morning, I went out in the hall and called Paul Levesque, and I says, "Have you seen the changes?" And he said, "No." That's all I have to say.
Okay. Well, we've got some time for Paul to get them, because we're not doing anything right now. And with that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2216. I'm going to open a public hearing on, what do we have on 33,005? We have 3,005 we've carried over once before. Do we have our Lane County folks here? Well, they probably thought we were going to go through the 3072 first. And, oh, let me see. Yeah, I think I'm going to go ahead and do 3,005. Some of the folks here from other places, Lane County, and from a variety of different angles, are here on this too, and then we'll reserve the rest of our time for 3072. So, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3005. And call up, they'll bring the folks who've been working on this for the last couple of years or year. Roger, where is Roger? What would be your preference? I've got Larry, I've got Milo, I've got Marcus, I've got Mike. You want to just bring the three that make the most sense?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Dave Nelson, former Executive Secretary of the Oregon Seed Council. And you got to the bill a little quicker than what we were standing around shooting a breeze in the hall. And I'm looking for the right page, but we presented an overview of the project in to the committee in February, on February 10th. And what we have is a project that we began working on after the 2007 session to provide an economically driven alternative to open field burning. And it really started in Eric Bauer's tall fescue field just outside of Harrisburg with two Lane County commissioners, Commission Chair Peter Sorensen and one of the commissioners, Bill Fleenor. And we started talking about, you know, how do we move beyond just this political bashing that's been going on for the last 40 years, 35 of them, which I've been involved in. And we concluded that an economically driven alternative use for annual ryegrass straw would consume a lot of the straw in the South Willamette Valley that's currently being burned that agitates citizens in the city of Eugene. We began with a project. The seed industry put up $250,000, subsequently another $100,000 to do, one, a feasibility study, two, to begin work on a business plan when the feasibility study was completed. During the interim, then chair of the interim committee, Representative Roblan, and I think you were on the committee as well, recommended or asked the Department of Agriculture to bring a request to the September e-board last September to fund the business plan to then enable us to go to the venture capital markets to put projects on the ground in place. Since then, of course, the economy fell apart, your budget fell apart, and so the emergency board subcommittee said, we like the project, we just don't have any money to fund it. So that's when the seed growers put up another $100,000 into this to start seed money, if you will, for the business plan. So let me introduce Mike McKenzie Barr, the feasibility study, who's to my left, or my right, your left, and Larry Bryce from the Novus Group. Mike is in Lane County, works for Lane County, was their economic development officer. Milo Meacham is Lane County Council of Governments. So it will give you a short overview of the project, where it stands today, and what we need are requesting from you in Senate, in House Bill 3005.
Mr. Chair, Representatives, as Dave mentioned, Mike McKenzie Barr, Lane County Community and Economic Development Coordinator. When we were here in February, we were just wrapping up the feasibility study. It is now completed. That is our feasibility study. From the feasibility study, we have a series of recommendations that came out of that. Just to back up one moment on the feasibility study, we basically had about 12 contractors that the county contracted with to look at various elements of converting annual ryegrass straw to renewable energy. We looked at five different conversion technologies: anaerobic digestion, cellulosic ethanol, pyrolysis, a little bit of gasification, and pelletizing. We looked at the costs of baling and transporting grass straw, basically developed every cost and business financial model that you could around the whole, turning it all in renewable energy, basically from the field to the output to the end users, including the byproducts, compost, nutrients, liquids, and so on. The recommendation out of the study was, and I want to get right to it so I actually read it correctly, basically build a public partnership, public-private partnership for funding, develop a business plan and seek funding for a bioenergy park. As we are discussing the bioenergy park, basically a place where multiple conversion technologies could take place. There were attributes of each of the conversion technologies for grass straw. Some of them were stronger attributes than others, but as we began to look at this and really delve down into it, we came up with that if we actually mixed it with some other waste products, we'd actually create more energy and actually solve some other problems besides burning. We could also deal with some landfill issues, some cost to other agricultural producers. And we also found that the waste from the various conversion technologies acted as great inputs for the other. So out of cellulosic ethanol, you get a brewer's yeast, which if you stuck into the anaerobic digester would greatly yield the energy content out of that anaerobic digester. So we met with about 17 to 20 different private capital groups to talk about funding such a project. And what we really came down to was, hey, feasibility study is great. You've got a lot of the information we need, but we really need further in-depth financials. And met with State Energy Loan Program, got their loan application, which requires a great deal of data, took that to some of the venture folks and said, this is what you want, created a hybrid basically from that of in the business plan of really what the capital markets need. And I guess we were, again, last Thursday meeting with capital folks. I believe we're really on the right path to develop that information from this 100,000 that Dave mentioned. We're in the midst of the business plan developing the information, but there's still more information that needs to be developed and has a cost to it from the various contractors. And I'm going to let Larry Bryce, Novus Group, talk a little bit about that. I want to mention this is already the feasibility study was both from the public side and the private side. And just the same thing with the business plan is that we've got public sector folks on it, and we have private sector, including folks who are already doing renewable energy projects, who have experience with the renewable energy projects, so that we're actually getting real-world costs and up-to-date costs for everything that we are doing.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I, as Mike and Dave introduced, I'm Larry Bryce with the Novus Group. I've been involved in doing a lot of the financial modeling and technology integration on the feasibility study, and just wanted to touch and follow up on some of the things that they said. We originally got into this to find a market-driven economic alternative to open fuel burning. I think that that's important for us to say. Dave's already alluded to the fact that the E-Board was very supportive of this. This project has had widespread support from the Department of Ag, Department of Energy, Lane County, as well as pretty strong support at the congressional level. We're working with Oregon Way and our congressional delegations to put us in a position for federal stimulus dollars and also in the appropriations bill for construction. We really wanted to make sure that we just didn't create a study that sat in a file drawer somewhere. We really want to build these projects, and we need your help to do that. The current state of the capital markets is such that it does require a greatly increased due diligence in business plans for funding. Without the type of business plan we're talking about here, I don't think we'd be successful in raising the capital. The state of Idaho did a relatively similar project for some of their agricultural products than cost them about $1.25 million to do it. This would be less than half of that. I think the most important thing is that it would allow us to jumpstart Oregon's ag-based renewable energy, create jobs. We'd be looking somewhere in the area of 76 construction jobs to begin with that would last a six-month period, and 90 direct and indirect full-time positions thereafter. It would lower our dependence on foreign oil and energy. It would help us meet state goals that we've set for our own internal energy production here in Oregon. It allows us to turn current waste stream products into energy. And it creates jobs. So anything that you could do to help us there, we're most appreciative of and appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you, Milo.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Milo Meacham. I work at the Lane Council of Governments in Eugene. I want to very briefly echo some of the things that have already been said. The advantage of this project is not only the creation of jobs that should survive most recessionary trends, because it's going to be an energy production, and we know that energy production is something that even in a recession you still need. The advantage I see to the product the project is not just that it uses agricultural waste, but it takes a wide range of waste. The grass straw, we're looking at slash from forests. We're looking at municipal wastes and turns all those wastes into energy. So we're going to be reducing the carbon load that's currently going into the environment now from those just deteriorating without being turned into energy. We hope that as the plan shows, if you have a copy of this handout, the idea is to build one product and use the waste from that product to build another product, producing lots of different kinds of energy and improving the Oregon economy in many different ways. So again, thank you very much for allowing us to come before you, and we'd very much like to ask for your support.
Representative Shoffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It says no revenue impact. I think this should be a positive revenue impact. I question this analysis, among other. And it's going to, this is clearly, you've already said, it's going to help this grass burning issue. People want to stop burning. Here's a good way to do it. You're going to provide sustainable, renewable energy. I think that's what the buzzwords. And so everyone should be able to support this. You said it's going to help rural communities, agriculture, economy, put people to work. You know, we just spent, and I misguidedly voted to spend 2 years ago, $20 million on a biofuel plant using corn from the great state of Iowa. And it's closed already. Now here we are asking for you are asking, and I, because I agree with you, for $250,000 to get this going and solve all these problems. And in with stuff that, with products that's right here within a stone's throw of this building. I wonder what I'm going to go look up and find out what the revenue impact statement of that biofuel plant was, that $20 million. I'd be willing to bet a good amount of money that it was a positive revenue impact statement, and this has no impact. You put all those jobs, all those people to work, you can't tell me that we aren't going to have a positive impact statement. And one more thing, I would like these projects built with prevailing wage workers.
Right.
And so, got my support. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, that's what the business plan is based Good. Upon, or the construction cost is based upon. We've presented you with two proposed amendments. The Dash 1 amendment was our thought that the Energy Department had $42 million in energy renewables, in energy conservation, renewable energy projects. And conversations between Roger Beyer and Mr. Graney have indicated that he's somewhat reluctant to embrace that amendment. Second amendment would be simply send us along to Ways and Means, keep the bill alive, and say if we can, the Dash 2, if we can persuade Ways and Means that this is a viable project and is worthy of support.
Thank you. Was that information passed on to our revenue analyst here about the $42 million?
I don't believe it was.
That's unfortunate.
Other than perhaps between conversations that I'm not privy to between Mike Graney and the revenue office.
Thank you.
Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair Clem. But this particular bill is about the plan.
It is. That's
correct. As opposed to anything else. But first we have to have the plan.
That's correct.
And then we look for more money.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Yeah. Good point.
That is a good point. Thank you, Representative.
Former Head Start director teaches some of the three-year-old behaving people like myself and someone else to read the bill a little better.
Well, I mean, we all.
I didn't think about
you.
That.
We're looking at when you said that.
I was looking between you two at that chair. It's been staring at me the whole time. I don't.
I would like to say this is a synergistic process. We all contribute something.
Okay. Please.
You have
another comment?
Mike.
Not we'll get
well, I suppose just in closing
8 minutes on this bill, I think.
Chairman and members, it is a plan, but without the plan,
that's
we
right.
can't get the funding to construct the facility and hire the workers. So it's
right.
That's just the environment we're in right now.
It's just a sort of odd nature of our revenue analysis that, you know, I have a longstanding beef that
if you spend locally versus somewhere else, there doesn't come back in through the revenue analysis something that offsets the additional cost potentially of spending locally, and it's just not built into our system yet to factor that in, the increased income tax revenue or additional multiplier spending. So it's a longer-term project.
Okay, Representative Roman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to, I could deal with either both of the amendments, but my biggest issue is I do think we need to keep this going. If Ways and Means is the best place to do that, then I would certainly support moving. This is a project that I got interested in actually a couple sessions ago. Continues to have legs. People really want to work on it. We have to, in my opinion. If we're going to ever get to the point where we actually use the biomass that we have in our state appropriately, this is probably the best place to start, because they're farther ahead than most. And if we're going to get a plan that shows that it can be economically feasible, that's the only way we're going to get industry to start investing. And we've got tax credits out there. These people can show how those can be used in this plan to supplement getting it going. I just think it's one of those things that this is a, if we don't do this, we will have put back years our opportunities to get going with this. So even in tough economic times, I think this is money we should set aside to do. So I hope we can figure out a way to keep it moving.
Representative Gilliam.
Echo that. Just want to be sure everyone knows I'm supportive. I appreciate you being here. This is classic win-win. Mm-hmm. It's going to be down to money. That's not for this committee, but at least we can keep a good idea alive. My only regret this morning is that my friend, my fellow representative, someone I respect and love, the representative from the evil empire, the Emerald Empire, is not here to hear this testimony. But let's all make sure he knows about this initiative, shall we?
We shall. I think it would actually be more helpful for me as your advocate in Ways and Means to have it there. It will be quite a conversation. So I think it would be helpful to have it move to Ways and Means. So,
cost of doing business.
Sir, did you have an interest in...
Well, I just, Mr. Chair, I wanted to reply to Representative Roman.
Could you just identify yourself?
Sure. My name is Milo Meacham, again, from the Lane Council of Governments. This project has been before the legislature several times. If you'll notice in the summary that it is our intent that we will not be coming before the legislature again, because if we can get your support today and move the project forward, we expect that by the time the legislature next comes in session, we'll be up and producing up power.
That's great. Okay, I think I will let you gentlemen go.
Thank you.
Roger, you're... All right. Samantha, could you join us again?
It's less than the pulp jobs.
Welcome back.
Thanks. Although I'm not representing anyone with my statements, I speak as a climate and forest advocate, also as a former coordinator.
I'm sorry, could you say your name one more time for the tape?
Samantha Cirillo from Lane County. I'm also a former coordinator of the campaign to end field burning. As a member of Cascadia Rising Tide, which generally opposes centralized, large-scale biomass use for energy production, because it believes that is a false solution. Instead, our organization works to address the root causes of climate change and climate injustice and economic injustice, which are overconsumption, overpopulation. And I also want to say that, you know, an energy source that depletes but does not restore our natural assets is not renewable. And so just to go into a little more detail about why I feel this way, biomass produces a low energy return on energy invested in terms of all of the costs that go into producing the energy. If you look at calculations from David Pimentel, a biomass expert, a cogen facility, which takes forest biomass, converts it to electricity that is 18.8 megawatts and supplies 13,000 homes per year with energy, such as the Seneca facility that's proposed for our county, In less than 10 years, the timber company would run out of material on its own lands to supply that on that continually running facility, and would need to go to public lands. And so this isn't energy that the public can use indefinitely. It's very short-term fix for a big problem that we need to address immediately, which is overconsumption. And I think that at a time when the state is cutting funding for essential services, it is wrong to be funding a project that doesn't have a demonstrable public benefit for the long term. Thank you.
So I would take that's the end of our public testimony. I'd take a motion. Oh, I'm sorry. Close public hearing on House Bill 3005. Open a work session on House Bill 3005.
Is it the dash? You got to do the dash ones.
Dash twos.
They're not in yet.
Oh, they are. They're in the packet.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the dash one amendments that dated.
Dash two.
Excuse me. Just adopt the amendment.
Representative Krieger moves the dash two amendments to the House Bill 3005. Is there any discussion? Any objection? If not, the amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3005 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the bill referred to Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Krieger moves House Bill 3005 to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a trip to Ways and Means by prior reference. Any discussion? The one thing I would say is I have a lot of concerns about growth and overpopulation, actually, as some of you know, especially my poor friends on land use. And one of the key things about managing that is making sure that farmers can survive and thrive and not fall prey to the temptation, which I've thought about it on our orchard before. What are you going to do if you can't make it? Well, there's a lot of people who like to move here and build houses on this earth and take it from food to feed people into residential living and cause even more problems for the climate with their vehicles until we figure that problem out. And I sincerely believe that this is the best way that I've seen to get at least half of the challenges of the problems associated for those with respiratory situations, with field burning, and maintain farmland, particularly in Lane County, so people are able to continue to enjoy the open space that they need to sort of replenish themselves on their way home from Salem, where they've been dealing here with us, and need something positive to see and relax while they drive home and know that people are making a living there and providing income taxes for the rest of us and my constituents here in Salem to be able to have jobs. So I'm strongly in support and in favor of this bill, and I'll do my best in Ways and Means to find the money. Representative Roebling.
Just a comment since we're here. I get frustrated at times. I am allergic to the smoke, so it bothers me. But I also recognize that if you look at historical records of the Willamette Valley from Native American populations on, it has always been a field-burning area. The grasses that grew in the valley traditionally caught on fire after they dried out. There were great comments about how smoky it was at the south end of the valley in historical records forever. It's a part of the natural deal and cycle, and yet we want to stop some of these things. We want natural cycles to incur because we believe in them, a lot of my environmental friends. And then when they don't work out, then we change those natural cycles. And I'm not saying that the way we do field burning is the natural way, but I contend that historically, long history, not our short period of time here, we had a lot of field burning that happened in this valley because the grasses grew, and then they got dried out, and lightning came through, and we had fires, and they were big deals, and they burn through, and it's nature's way of purifying the ground and taking care of it, and getting disease out, and lots of other kinds of stuff. It's happened in forests for eons. It's happened everywhere, and we try to mimic it sometimes, and farmers do that because they know it's the best method. I mean, it's nature's way of purifying. And then we don't like that because it has other impacts. And I understand that, but I think we can't be short-sighted. We have to look at different options. And I look at this bill as one of those ways of trying to figure out how we can do some things. And I hope that when they get done harvesting this straw and using it in a productive way, that they don't find that the only answer then to keep the ground healthy is to pour chemicals on it to kill the other stuff. But we figure out ways with high-tech burning and other methods that don't maybe make as much smoke, but they do take care of the problem so you can replant and you have a healthy environment still. So just to comment.
Thank you. Representative Schaffler?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. You know, I, as a legislator, have voted repeatedly and will continue, and just spoke to, as a matter of fact, a bill relating to sex education and appropriate age in our public schools for a long list of related reasons, including unwanted pregnancies, which are a huge drain on our state pocketbook, to say nothing of human suffering that goes along with it, which is more important to me. My wife and I have chosen to only have one child. But you know what? I just don't see how that argument should be. It has any relevance in this discussion, to be quite frank with you, with all due respect. And this issue, this concept does address the very problems that were testified about just now. So I just am vexed by the conversation in this state. And my question is, if we don't allow people to grow grass and don't let them burn their fields, or in this case, actually do something with their byproduct, what are we going to tell them to do? Do we just want the Willamette Valley to return back to a wetland? I think there's those that do want that, but that is just simply unacceptable. But the idea of population growth, the Oregon legislature is never, ever going to effectively address the idea of global population growth, in my humble opinion.
Samantha, you got to know we at least listen to what you say. So you're being heard. Maybe not agreed with, but we'll keep talking.
One clarification. I'm not in favor of field burning. I think that we should be growing food on that land. I mean, the best use would deplete the soil for energy.
Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair Clem. I would like to say that I am appreciative of the fact that it's local government that have come forward with this plan. And I think that because it's local government, I am quite confident they will undergo far more scrutiny than we will in this dais, because they live there and they face these problems on a regular basis. So I would like to say that this is what the locals want, and I think I can support the local approach.
Representative Potter.
Well, I just as well say something at this point in time. Coming from the Eugene Springfield area where this is very prevalent, I just think this is a great proposal. I mean, it really is kind of like war out there in the community, where people are battling each other over the field burning, the farmers who need to make a living, the public that is concerned about their health. So I think any way that we can address this and alleviate that conflict is one of the best things we could do.
The speaker reminded us in the beginning of the session to put down our swords and pick up our plowshares, and we'll maybe be able to end some of our thermal sanitation with this mechanism. All right. Kirk, I need to... Were we in a work session?
Mm-hmm.
We're in a work session.
No, I think
please.
We just passed the amendment, so we're ready to vote.
Yeah.
We're ready to vote.
Yes. Representative Kugar, I'm ready.
Okay. Move House Bill 305 to the floor with the pass amendment with the two pass. With the free for all the ways and means. We did that.
Yeah.
We did it. We're waiting for a vote.
That's where we got distracted.
Oh. Was the clerk who fell the roll? I'm sorry. I got distracted by my own orange shirt.
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative Roblin?
Aye.
Representative Schaffler?
Aye.
Representative Winder?
Aye.
Vice Chair Van Orman?
Aye.
Vice Chair Kruger?
Aye.
Chair Clark?
Aye. Bill passes and will be sent on the ways and means. Okay, going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3072. And because we're going to have about 45 minutes, I'm going to ask people to keep it to between 3 and 4 minutes if they can. I've got first up, and I'll call people in panels. Samantha, you're up first. Tim Josie and Andy Dyke.
Samantha Cirillo, Lane County. In the community planning workshop that I took as a graduate student in public policy, I helped Tillamook County develop a vision plan. And in that process, it was really clear that citizens want balance of recreation, natural asset preservation, and jobs in the timber industry and other industries. From their comments, from the public forums that we had, from the surveys that we did, it was not clear that they wanted to make timber harvesting the number one priority for the forest closest to them. Our state forests have already undergone substantial timber harvest to meet the purpose of providing revenue to schools, which was intended to be their initial purpose. But it's time for a more balanced purpose, especially given our current state of affairs in terms of depression of the market for timber. It's just not even economically sensible to be harvesting at this moment. And we also need to be giving future generations the same opportunities that these forests have given us. So we need to preserve their resilience, which is their biodiversity. Clear cutting, by its very nature, provides limited jobs and only in the short term. You've all said yourself earlier, I believe, that the state is concerned about fire risk and feels that fire risk reduction must be an objective on public lands. While converting forest into tree plantation is something that certainly increases fire risk and jeopardizes the ability to harvest timber in the future, just by the nature of it increasing fire risk. Therefore, clear cutting and conversion to plantation are neither great nor permanent and are of value to the industry but not to the public at large. Now, even the Board of Forestry has voted in opposition to this bill. It just compromises too many other values for the sake of one industry that is only about 10% of our economy, tourism and recreation being more than double that. This bill would contribute to climate change and make Oregon's forests less resilient to the effects of climate change. If the legislature is not going to pass a firm carbon cap this legislative session, it must not exacerbate climate change by destroying mature and old-growth forests that are still on some of our state forest lands. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I have to leave. I want to address some things Samantha said.
Please, yeah, Representative Schaffler notified me he's ready for Portland at 9:30. So please.
Miss, in any of your studies, did you hear the statistic that after these huge conflagrations that raged through Oregon just a few years ago, there was a poll done in Oregon, and 72% of Oregonians polled said that they would like to see those forests salvaged and replanted. And there was also a measure on the ballot a few years ago that would have restricted logging on state lands by 50%. And if I remember right, because it was resoundingly defeated. So with all due, and by the way, you really have a lot of passion, and I appreciate that. I'm twice your age. I'm old and grumpy, and you're the future, and God bless you. I hope you continue in your passionate struggle to effect positive change. But I just really have to take issue with someone coming up before this committee and saying that the people of this state do not want a viable wood fiber industry in the state, because it's simply not true. So God bless you. I have to go, but I had to get that out of there before I left.
Great. Tim.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler, I'm deeply disappointed you won't be here for my testimony.
I can stay a few more minutes, Commissioner.
Thank you. You can go. I'm just kidding. Well, after that last testimony, I'm very grateful that I graduated from Oregon State. Having said that, I want to be a little more serious about this. This has been an awful, awful experience for me. I spent 8 years in the Oregon legislature, knew something about state forest lands, and but once I became a county commissioner, I got involved in the adoption.
Oh, Tim, you identify yourself for the record.
Oh, Tim Josie, county commissioner, chair of the Forest Trust Land Counties. Thank you. And so I got involved in this issue, and it's just been one heck of a battle for a long time. Representative Krieger was on the Board of Forestry at the time, and so he understands what this is all about. This bill, this is the third legislative session this bill has been before us, and it's been mischaracterized in a lot of ways. The Oregonian said that just last week that this would create an industrial tree farm. How in the world would it do that? I have no idea. The Board of Forestry is the body that controls these lands. This bill gives guidance and lots of latitude in terms of direction. If the Board of Forestry is going to create an industrial tree farm, they will do it, not this bill if it passes. So that's baloney. I wish the Oregonian had listened to me, but they didn't talk to me. They never talked to me. They didn't talk to the Wild Salmon Center and some of the other folks, but never talked to the trust counties. This morning, driving over here, I heard from Steve Wilson on National or Oregon Public Radio, and he's a good guy, brand new member of the Board of Forestry, but he said that he does not support this bill because it would diminish multi-purposes. Well, there are multi-purposes out on this land right now. The balance is out of whack at this point in time. Just to talk about what that means, we have some new numbers for the three Northwest districts. The industrial model would put the annual harvest at 272 million board feet. That's under the Forest Practices Act. Last year, or the current year annual operation plan for these three forests is 157 million board feet. Where's the balance? Now, this whole thing got started back when the greatest permanent value rule was adopted, and Representative Krieger talked about that. The greatest permanent value rule was adopted because of a settlement on a court case where the parties settled and said, before you go forward with any more timber sales, you have to define what greatest permanent value is, and you have to have standards. So then the Board of Forestry adopted the greatest permanent value rule. And the greatest permanent value rule, it says, as provided in ORTH 530, greatest permanent value means healthy, productive, and sustainable forest ecosystems that over time and across the landscape provide a full range of social, economic, and environmental benefits to the people of Oregon. This bill wouldn't change that. What the greatest permanent value does from there, it talks about what those values are. A, sustainable and predictable production of forest products. B, properly functioning aquatic habitats. C, habitats for native wildlife, so on and so forth. This bill wouldn't change that either. But what the greatest permanent value rule neglected to do was to create a hierarchy. All right, what's the primary purpose of these lands? It didn't do it. But the Board of Forestry at the time, and the state forester at the time, the trust counties at the time, and the timber industry at the time, when it was adopted and the forest management plan was adopted in 2001, understood what the primary purpose was. Even though it wasn't detailed in the greatest permanent value rule, they understood. Since then, we've got a brand new Board of Forestry. We have a new state forester come in, and they don't understand the history of the lands. They were dealt with a failing forest management plan. We were told that the forest would produce under an industrial model about 350 to 320 million board feet per year, and we settled on about 279 million board feet per year. Both of those figures were wrong, but the fact of the matter is the difference from the Forest Practices Act and what we settled for was, like that. And so it still had primacy, even though the numbers were wrong. But today, the primacy is gone because the numbers keep going down. Now, and in terms of our legal rights, in this is the counties were granted a statutory right, and this is when these lands were deeded to the state some 70 years ago, about 20 years before I was born. The counties were granted a statutory right to designate their lands for a variety of uses, such as logging, recreation, grazing, etc., and the counties designated the vast majority of such lands as valuable for forest. So there was actually, they said, all right, what do you... We're going to designate these lands for these different things. And the vast majority of lands were designated as lands for harvest. And then Judge Ertzgard, the first time we had to sue the state is when they wanted to take some land away from us and create a state park. We sued, we won. And Judge Ertzgard said, went all the way to the Supreme Court and we won. But Judge Ertzgard in 1984 said, a trust relationship exists between the parties. The state has a fiduciary responsibility to its partners, which are in the nature of a trustee obligation.
Tim, can I ask one question on that?
Sure.
When you say take away, were they going to purchase with park funds or actually just transfer?
No, it was a transfer. They were going to take some state forest lands away from, it was a Crabtree Valley in Linn County owned by Willamette Industries. Mm-hmm. They were going to take that land in exchange for some state forest lands in Linn County. And then so Willamette Industries would have ended up with state forest lands that they would own, and the state would take the Crabtree Valley and create a state park. We sued them and we won. Lost in appeals court, but the circuit court or the Supreme Court, we won. We won in circuit court, lost in appeals, won in Supreme Court. And then in 2005, the legislature took $10 million from the Forest Development Fund. This is the money that is used by the state timber revenues, used by the department to manage these lands on our behalf. And we told the legislature, you can't do that, but they took it and put it in the general fund, and we won. And so the money had to be returned back, and there were some twists and turns, and I won't go into that. But Judge Barron said, a 70-year history exists where all actions taken by the state have been with the consent of the counties. The statutory scheme envisions management of the forest lands to achieve the highest return to the counties.
And can you kind of summarize and maybe even come back at the end for questions if we need to?
So the bottom line is we've been trying for a long time to get the purpose of these lands recentered. And that's all this bill does is it. If this bill were to pass, it would require the Board of Forestry to rewrite the greatest permanent value rule so that it is understood that the legal rights behind these lands are primarily for timber production. It doesn't mean an industrial tree farm. It doesn't mean that it's going to be a rape and pillage. It means that there's going to continue to be a multi-purpose on these lands. My freshman year in the Oregon legislature, I worked on House Bill 2501 in this committee, which created the Forest Recreation Plan. I believe in multi-use, and there's lots of multi-use out there. This bill would not diminish that.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Andy Dyke, and I'm a Washington County Commissioner representing the west end of Washington County, the area where all of the 50,000 acres of Tillamook Forest land that are within Washington County reside. I'm not speaking today representing our Board of Commissioners, but I do represent myself as the District Commissioner. Back in the 90s when the Council of Forest Land back in the 90s, I was a member of the Council of Forest Trust Lands and represented our county there when the purpose rule was developed. And at that time, I remember the testimony well. It was crafted as a great compromise, but it clearly, in my mind at least, insinuated that timber would still be the primary use of the forest because that was always the accepted use when the trust was created. As time has gone by, the trust has been challenged many times, and I don't want to reiterate what Commissioner Josie has already said. Your time is very valuable here, so I'll just kind of paraphrase that. If we continue to change the purpose of the lands, it makes the trust very indefensible from a legal standpoint. And I urge this committee to keep that in mind and to maintain the integrity of the trust by maintaining what the original purpose of the lands were, and that was timber production. I think if anybody looks back in the history at the history of the trust, it's very clear what was intended. I know that times change. I know that it can be argued that this is a new paradigm. We have a different set of values, but this is still a legal trust, and I think that should be foremost in everybody's mind when we're making these decisions that are going to affect whether the trust is viable in the future or not. Lastly, again, just to paraphrase, because it's already been stated, this is not going to create an industrial tree farm. There's no reason in the world to believe that it does. Our county has supported the forest management plan as it currently stands, and I see no reason why changing and clarifying that timber harvest is the primary purpose of these forests is going to change the range of values that we have set for the forests currently. Thank you very much.
Thank you, gentlemen. I'm going to call Jim Geisinger, Ralph Stapperstein, and John Blackwell up.
Chair Klein and members of the committee, if I had the opportunity to address you with our state forester.
Oh, as a team member. Please, why don't we wait on you two, and I'll just have Dave Ivanoff join Jim and Ralph.
Thank you.
Yeah, you bet.
John,
I was going to say he's got his boss sitting next to him, but I think it's the other way around, actually. Although, probably on any given day, there's a back and forth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jim Geisinger, in class of 75. And 76, so I had such a good time there. I wanted to stay an extra.
You think you would have wore the colors?
Yeah.
I represent
hats and coats upstairs if you need them.
I represent Associated Oregon Loggers. We're an association that represents over 1,000 small family-owned businesses involved in the logging industry. And I want to start by saying our industry is hurting in a way that it hasn't in almost 30 years. And we need some relief from the state and from the federal government. We know our market's going to get better, but we don't know when. And getting a supply of wood from our state lands in the short term that's priced consistent with our current lumber markets is very, very important. And that's one of the reasons that we support House Bill 3072. Our industry, in spite of everything that has happened to it, is still the second biggest industry in this state behind high tech. And when you get out of the metropolitan areas and you get off the I-5 corridor, we are the biggest industry in this state. And our rural communities still depend on natural resources, contrary to popular belief. While we're a colorful part of the history of this state, we're also an integral part of its future, and we should be a part of its economic and social future. We manage a renewable resource, and there's no place in the state where that's more apparent than on our state forest lands. You have to remember that nature destroyed most of our state forest lands many, many decades ago. Catastrophic wildfires swept through the Tillamook and the Clatsop, and even the Elliott State Forest was created by a fire regime. It was suggested earlier that we shouldn't be clear-cutting our state forests. Well, if anyone has seen pictures of what the Tillamook State Forest looked like in the 1930s, it was the most devastating moonscape you have ever seen. No amount of clear-cutting could make a forest look like that fire made it look. We reseeded it, it was replanted, and today the environmental community refer to the Tillamook as the last remnants of our temperate rainforest. Well, it was dirt and mud back in the 1930s. We salvage logged it in a way that would never be permitted today, dragging logs through streams, running caterpillars up and down streams, and now those streams are teeming with salmon, referred to as the most pristine fisheries that we have in the state. There is no place in the Northwest, or maybe even in the country, where our forests have proven themselves to be more resilient than our state forest lands here in Oregon. So I think it's time for the legislature to give rural Oregon a hand, to give some firm direction to our state Department of Forestry on how these lands should be managed. I would concur with the county commissioners that testified there is no intent to turn these into industrial tree farms, but we can realize a lot lot more of the growth potential than we are today and do it in a way that's environmentally, socially responsible, and not to mention the legal mandate that exists to share revenues with the counties. So I would just conclude my comments with that, and I would be happy to answer any questions when appropriate.
Thank you. Ralph, do you like to go next?
Yes. Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Ralph Saperstein. I'm here on behalf of Boise Cascade, Douglas Timber Operators, and I support everything Jim Geisinger said, who I also try to represent at times. One of the things that is critical to the state timber, state forests is that these are not federal forests. We have 13 million acres of federal forest land in Oregon that generally is not managed for timber production. And these, because of the trust responsibility that Mr. Josie spoke to, these lands are special that the state forests have, and they shouldn't be treated the same way as their federal forest lands. And as far as endangered species go, like the marble murrelet and the spotted owl, very clearly the federal scientists determined that state forest lands were not necessary for the protection or the recovery of the spotted owl and the marble murrelet. These lands should be timber-dominant lands, even though the land management plans or this rule change for the greatest permanent value will not result in timber-dominant lands. They will result in multiple-use management of these state forests. And then finally, as Mr. Geisinger mentioned, the economic stimulus that's needed. You folks passed a $175 million stimulus package 2 months ago. This is a much more effective and would have much larger employment gains to increase timber harvest on state lands in terms of economic stimulus and encouraging employment. With that, that's...
I wanted to say, this is an odd time to take this, but you just reminded me of something that I thought I would clarify for the committee regarding federal forest lands. We had about a three-hour conversation earlier in session about the Western Oregon Plan revision. You'll notice that the resolution in support of it, I chose not to schedule for an additional hearing. And the reason I did that was after speaking with leadership and both parties in the chamber and folks from interested parties on all sides, but more importantly, the governor, I received their commitment that they were offering to withdraw his objection to the whopper from the Secretary of the Interior, and he met with the Secretary of the Interior on Thursday and talked to them about his commitment to see the harvest levels implemented and to not throw the baby out with the bathwater. And at that point, I felt it was not productive to further, we all have our names on the resolution who want to be on it, and I felt it was not further productive to continue to discuss that plan when I believe it's positively moving in a direction that most of us desire. So I just thought I would let you know why you didn't see that. I went and told this other sponsor with myself last night because I'd forgotten to tell her, and she was not exactly sure why her bill wasn't scheduled, but we've clarified that. Just want to get that out there. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Clem and members of the committee. My name is Dave Ivanoff. I'm the Vice President of Resources for Hampton Lumber, a family-owned forest products company headquartered in Portland. We have sawmills in Willamina and Tillamook, and during normal market cycles, we employ over 500 people in those locations. And our sawmills are very heavily dependent upon public timber supply. Back in 1994, when this forest management plan process began, I was very involved right from the onset. And early on, I expressed some deep concerns about the self-imposed constraints that the Department of Forestry was putting into the plan, in that they might unnecessarily reduce timber outputs and revenue flow to meet the fiduciary responsibility that exists with the counties. And some of those constraints that I had concern about were extended rotation ages across the landscape, onerous riparian and buffering strategies, and other constraints that go far beyond the protection measures of the Forest Practices Act without the scientific justification to do so. When the Forest Management Plan was approved in January of 2001, I frankly thought we had achieved a win-win scenario. However, after several years of plan implementation, ODF personnel acknowledged in late 2008 that the simultaneous achievement of the revenue targets and the other measures embodied within the plan was not possible. had the forest industry and certainly the county's been aware that the revenue outputs would not be achievable, there would not have been the broad public support for the plan in 2001. And I think this is especially compelling in that former state forester Jim Brown, who was the architect of the plan, his staff told him when they came to him with the idea of structure-based management, Jim asked how much timber are we going to produce every year, and his staff said we should be able to produce 270 million feet a year off the North Coast. And it was only on that basis that Jim gave the go-ahead to proceed with structure-based management. Subsequent to that time, there's just been ongoing controversy about the disappointing outputs under the plan. And in November 2007, the Board of Forestry met in Klamath Falls to try to address the problems. And specifically, at the November 2007 meeting, the department was given direction by the board in a consensus-based decision to improve the revenue outputs and also try to improve the wildlife habitat targets going forward. Over the last year, the Department of Forestry has done significant work, and to my dismay, in the November 6, 2008 Board of Forestry meeting, the staff recommended movement to achieve the revenue, but recommended achievement of the targets for other measures. To me, this violates the original intent of the transfer of these lands to state ownership. As Tim Josie testified, Paul Levesque of Tillamook County has testified in front of the Board of Forestry on numerous occasions about what the historical intent was, and frankly, to put improvement in revenue subordinate to other goals seems like a clear departure from what the original trust mandate was, and that should not be done in my view. Since the early 1990s, with the shutdown of the federal timber sale program, many family-owned companies like Hampton have been importing logs from the state of Washington and from British Columbia to replace that lost federal supply. Because of new capacity coming online in Washington and the high transportation costs, that supply is becoming increasingly less available to us. To echo what Jim Geisinger said, the infrastructure in Oregon, not only in the manufacturing capacity, but also in our contract logging community, is imperiled and at the risk of permanent downsizing unless and until improvement in public timber supply in this state manifests itself. As it relates to the revenue impacts of managing the lands under a more traditional approach versus the current structure-based management approach, recent harvest modeling work done by the department would suggest that there's a difference of about 130 million board feet per year sustainably available to the citizens with a different approach. Using stumpage rates from 2004 through 2008 at $320 a thousand, that represents an annual revenue shortfall of $42 million per year. The county's portion of that represents about $26.5 million that could be used every year to support local schools and roads and local taxing districts. In summary, the state of Oregon owns about 3% of the forest land base in this state, and the ability of those lands to contribute significantly to the old-growth habitat needs of old-growth dependent species is problematic at best with that small acreage. However, the higher sustainable outputs that would come from a different management approach would not only perpetuate a viable forest product sector and healthy forests, but we would improve the health of our rural communities and improve Oregon's economy. This doesn't have to be an either-or scenario. A person has to do is look at the good work that's been done under the Oregon Salmon Plan by both private and public landowners in practicing forestry. And I would respectfully request this committee support House Bill 3072 to provide a clear pathway for the good people within the Department of Forestry to manage these lands. Support of this bill would not result in a prescriptive approach from the legislature, but would just allow, from a policy perspective, the department to more consistently manage these lands with the intent of the original transfer. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Is that figure?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, for the record, I'd already talked a little bit
already about it, but I want to go over it again, is that when I was on the Board of Forestry, what was our intent when we made the change? And we did have concerns about changing the purpose of the lands rule and the definition of permanent value. And Dick Baldwin and I talked about that a lot with Jim Brown. And we were very concerned how it was viewed by the environmental for-profit industry and how they would misconstrue that. Now, what came about at the time, difficulty, was that the board operated by consensus, which is a horrible thing to do, because you get yourself in the corner. You can sit there for a month if you can't get a consensus, and you continue to wait. If it had gone to a vote, it probably wouldn't have passed. And I'm hoping that the new board does go to voting, because you will get down to saying just where you are and bringing people to some reasonableness. We talk about being environmentally sustainable. Under the Oregon Forest Practice Rules, those things are going to take place. And as you just heard, all these values that we're talking about are not exclusive of one another. You can have viable forest management, high harvest rates, and still take care of the environment. And all those other values are protected underneath the Forest Practice Rules. You know, soil, water, wildlife, recreation, all those are still going to be attended to. But if you go back and you talk about the two or three legal cases they had about what the purpose of those lands are, and that the county trust lands were there as a hierarchy for timber, that is what we intended. That's what I intended when I voted. I know that's what Dick Baldwin intended when he voted. But somehow it got screwed around to where it could be misconstrued what we meant.
Representative Groveland.
Yeah, mostly just a comment as well. I appreciate the testimony that we've had. But for me, I find it inconceivable that people believe that changing it to greatest permanent value would change it to a different kind of forest. If you go back and look historically, the Oregon Constitution tells you what the primary purpose of the Elliott State Forest is. It is to produce money, revenue, for the state school fund. Therefore, harvest is the number one. I mean, it's clearly there. And is it harvested a whole? Does it look like a tree farm? It does not. ONC lands have, on the federal part, have always had the primary purpose is production of revenue because of their original state. It kind of got off course. We went to court. Industry took it to court. The Ninth Circuit, who is probably not the most conservative of our court systems in the federal system, agreed that it has to be harvested differently. I mean, they've clearly said it. Is it being harvested differently? We have plans that people keep doing, but it has a different harvest. The issue is, do we, I believe, the state, honor our trust relationship with the counties by putting into statute that what we've said? Now, I want to clearly state that I was involved with a bill of this exactly the same last time. Had conversations, realized that it was not going to make it through the building. The governor did explain to me that he would look at two things. I went to the state board as I committed that I would, and I believe they have done the things that I asked with regard to, if we didn't move the bill last time, you know, would we end up having a vote? And I want to commend the state board. They did take a vote yesterday instead of waiting for consensus, and I truly appreciate that process beginning. At the same time, they will continue to take votes, and they will continue to manage this property. And the fact that we put down that the primary purpose is this one, and make a list, I would contend that the state parks should have the same list, a list of primary purposes for state parks. And I would not put timber harvest as their top. It would be at the bottom, and at the top would be recreation, and the next one might be environment, and the next one might be water quality, those other kinds of stuff. They should have the same kinds of things. So you know that there's a balance in the state, that there are different parts of our state who have different responsibilities. And parks have one set of responsibilities that help all of us as citizens. And that doesn't mean that we shouldn't have other values in our forest land, because they will. I want our state forest to always be open to hunting and recreation. The problem that I think some people get into is we set up in our forests places where people want to go camp. And they become these camp areas. and they don't want them to ever change. Well, that's not what happens in forests. They change. And what happens if you go through the area and harvest it for a while, there'll be another camp area that will be really wonderful. And another generation will find another part of this wonderful state we have grow to be their place. And it cannot stay the same. And I think that having this acknowledged lets people know that here's this landscape that we have a responsibility to manage, and that when we're looking at all those management processes, we better make sure that while we're harvesting over here, we're maintaining over here water quality, all those other kinds of things. And do I think they should be at the same standards? I think that the state board has a responsibility to look at it and say, you know, we've got private property that is pretty much decided there's one species they like, and that's what they're going to plant. On state lands, I think we have an opportunity to plant other kinds of trees and make sure that we have other stuff there. No one's ever complained about that. And the truth is, 25, 30 years from now, that choice may turn out to be a really good advantage for the state, because that might be the product that everybody wants that isn't available other places. So I just don't understand why people believe that putting this, acknowledging the trust relationship we've had for 70 years with the counties, puts at risk these state lands with respect to providing all these benefits for our state. It just frustrates me that people don't quite understand that. So,
and the question is, Jim Geisinger, don't you agree?
And the question is, Jim Geisinger, don't you agree?
I was going to say, these are excellent questions.
Softballs.
I was taken over for Schaffler because he was gone.
I know. I just want to get the rest of people up at some point. Representative Wingard.
I want to add to this discussion that I believe, in my opinion, that the state is already in violation of its trust responsibilities here, and that it is open to a lawsuit challenging the way that it currently manages the forest. I'll read one sentence.
Would you like to direct this to the state forester and the forester when they get up here?
I want everybody to hear it.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll read from a 1992 Attorney General opinion. This was Charles Crookham at the time. Non-economic factors may be considered only if they do not adversely affect the potential financial contribution to the common school fund. We have a legal obligation to manage these forests to produce revenue for schools. They are not parks. They can be parks. That can be incorporated into what we're doing, but we have a legal obligation to produce this revenue for schools. And why the different lobbyists for the public school groups are not here advocating as strongly for it, I do not know, because in every other hearing they are advocating for additional funding. And again, I think that we have been in a red zone for some time legally, and we are open to a lawsuit, which will be very costly. It will be a lengthy litigation, and I think ultimately the state will lose on this issue. And I don't think that this bill does anything other than clarify what is already the legal reality. And there is a mechanism for changing that. There's a constitutional mechanism for changing that trust relationship if the people of Oregon wish to do that. But right now, we are legally obligated to follow the law on this. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, I am not going to entertain any more comments right now because I want to make sure the public gets to finish, and then we'll go back to our sermonizing.
Actually, I'm sorry. No, it's all right. It's a question, but it's all right.
Do you think someone else can handle that?
I'll throw it out there. Thank you, Chair Clem. I'll just throw it out, and whoever can answer it can answer it. It's kind of like, do we really need this bill? If it's already there, do we really need this?
I think you will get answers to that question, or opinions at least, multiple answers to that question.
Okay.
That's a good framework for coming forward. Please, State Forester and the Chair of the Board of Forestry.
Chair Quinn, members of the committee, thanks for this time. I'm John Blackwell, Chair of the Oregon Board of Forestry, and I'm appearing before you today as a result of a meeting yesterday of the Board of Forestry, April 20th, 2009. Yesterday, by majority vote, the Board chose to respectfully stand in opposition to this proposed legislation that would affect the statutory mandate for how forests are managed in Oregon. House Bill 3072 proposes to change existing definition of greatest permanent value, which defines the management results sought for state forests under the purview of the Oregon Board of Forestry. House Bill 3072 would also apply a new definition in statute to the common school lands, although the management authority and goals for those forest lands derive from the Oregon Constitution. House Bill 3072 proposes that management place timber production for revenue to the counties as the highest priority. Currently, greatest permanent value directs no explicit priority to any particular use. The existing definition of greatest permanent value has invited debate for too long, as we all know. As a result, the Board of Forestry is responding to your concerns and is engaged in the following. The Board has moved from a 10-year review cycle for state forest management plans to a biennial review, making it more responsive to current needs. Under this new cycle, and with the use of performance measures, the Board is completing its review of proposed changes that will increase revenues from timber harvest and revise strategies for species of concern. As a trade-off, both long-term and short-term amounts of complex structure will decrease as compared with the current plan, although there will be more short-term protection of complex structure. As part of a necessary review of greatest permanent value, I will soon be recommending to the Board of Forestry that we undertake a review of the definition of greatest permanent value, and the purpose will be threefold. It will be to describe management that fully acknowledges the interdependence of economic, social, and environmental benefits. Secondly, it will construct a definition of greatest permanent value that specifically establishes the results for an approach that balances economic, social, and environmental benefits. And thirdly, it develops a planning process that gives the Board of Forestry sufficient policy engagement and oversight while improving the plan. The Oregon Board of Forestry fully acknowledges the need for more dynamic and responsive management of our state forests. We embrace actions that will assure improved results for Oregonians. We appreciate the level of interest shown by the legislature, but we ask that the Board of Forestry be given proper opportunity to address the concerns that you seek to remedy with House Bill 3072. Thank you for your time, and I'd ask that that our state forester be given the opportunity to add his comments.
Thank you, Chair Clem, members of the committee. Again, I'm Arvin Brown, Department of Forestry Director. Just a couple of thoughts, and they may be, get a little more technical than what you want. First of all, Representative Wingard, you're totally right on the opinion you quoted there for the common school fund lands, but those lands are statutorily different than the Board of Forestry lands, and the Bill 3072 references both of them, but they are different from a statutory standpoint. And actually, we have an Attorney General's opinion from, I think the year was 2006, but I don't know. I can get a copy of it. But the Attorney General did develop an opinion around the board's fiduciary and trust responsibilities to the counties. And I guess the way to summarize that up the best is that the Attorney General's opinion says that the board does in fact have very wide discretion in the level of revenue that is returned to the counties, and that's not exactly what a lot of other people reference in history, but it is the most current Attorney General's opinion that we've got. In terms of the plan, what I want to say is I really appreciate Chair Blackwell's leadership in identifying that we do need to make some changes to the plan, and that's what we're engaged in right now. The plan, I've been here for about 6 years now, and it's been sort of like peeling back an onion, layer by layer, trying to figure out just exactly what is the core of this thing. And as I would describe it, the plan right now is driven by one set of values. Those values are around habitat, aquatic and terrestrial habitat. The way the plan is structured, was adopted as administrative rule, which gives it the force of law, which means if the Board of Forestry does not implement in alignment with the plan, then we would be found in violation. So in our implementation of that plan, the things that we have to build that implementation around are habitat objectives, riparian, terrestrial. And that, to me, has made it very difficult to, as some people have said, recenter the set of benefits that come from this. There is no similar set of statements in the plan that say you have to provide this level of revenue or you have to provide this level of recreation. There's very specific statements in the plan that says you have to provide this level of complex habitat, you have to provide this level of riparian protection. And so it is out of balance in my mind, and Chair Blackwell has been just excellent at understanding some of this. And beyond just trying to make some of these changes within the plan that we've been working through right now and hope to finish in June, he's also agreed to take a fundamental look at this whole issue, from starting with how greatest permanent value is defined in administrative rule through the whole plan itself. And I just want to say, to me, that's significant.
So, I was a commission chair myself for 6 years. My wife was for 6 or 8. It's been one of the most rewarding things that I've had the opportunity to do. And so I sympathize with, because I didn't like it, when the legislature got frustrated or decided to place strings on things that, we were working on in the Student Assistance Commission and other things. However, there is, there has to be a timer on this, and I understand that. And so I guess my question is, if we took a look at amendments, I would, want your input on something that basically said, by sine die, or maybe July 1, we require the board to go into rulemaking, either temporary but then permanent, and amend the definition of the greatest permanent value to, and I would, I would start from my personal belief on the timber production is the correct one, or something substantially equivalent. And then you go and have your conversations as a board that says we're going to have timber production or something substantially equivalent. And if you haven't acted by that date, then timber production becomes the automatic provision. And if it's something substantially equivalent, and the legislature, maybe that's not the right word, but the word needs to be basically something very similar, then the legislature would direct the state forester to align the plan goals with the plan outcomes, because I think that's been the problem. And it's been it on the Northwest Forest Plan federally. It's 1 billion board feet. The outcome is 280. It's just the goals and the outcomes never seem to match. And I think I would be open to giving you the opportunity to continue to work on this, but auto implementation, if it doesn't occur, and if it does occur and it doesn't meet the criteria that essentially were represented in this bill, then direct the forester to align the plan goals or have the commission direct the forester to align the goals with the outcomes on his own. And so, that's one place. And I just don't like backroom dealing, so I just thought I would say it here so everybody can hear it. That's the one place I can go. We're going to have a conversation with the Senate on this, and we're both carrying swords right now. And at some point in a conference committee, if we can even get the bill heard, we're going to have to figure out something, and this is about as far as I could go, what I just outlined. So I just wanted your feedback. If not, you can think about it and get back to me at another point.
Well, I would like to comment quick. Thank you for that, and certainly I'd love to have that dialogue. My impressions are that if the Board of Forestry doesn't provide some level of certainty on timber harvest by the 1st of July, we're probably in trouble. The process of revising greatest permanent value is going to be more lengthy than it, simply from the process of meeting and discussing. I'm not expressing any opposition at all to what you're proposing.
Representative Verbal.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my feeling, if we can't get to that, and throwing out in the openness of the meeting, I if we could get something around the fact that we will implement at the Northwest Forest Practices Act level, except where the board can show the reasons why it didn't get to that level in some action. So, I mean, I think that there was a lot of vetting in the Northwest Forest Act with lots of people, and they came to lots of different conclusions about different things. And though federal forests have never made that, or state forests have never made those levels, I think that if you aren't going to make the levels, in my opinion, then there should at least be a discussion about what value did you take away to not reach that? I mean, what one got the bigger weighting to say, we can't get there, so here's where we're at. So in those conversations, I just think having some realistic expectations out there, and then why we didn't meet those expectations because of a different value we set. I don't have any problem with setting the other values. I don't even have that conversation. But someplace in there, there should be an explanation about why didn't we get to something that a very large group of people came to consensus saying was a pretty reasonable expectation for these kinds of forests. And most everybody, including our state forests and others, when they look at just the growing potential of the land and what it could produce, come up with fairly similar numbers, give or take. It's just that we have other competing values. You know, we have a larger riparian zone. We need that for whatever. I just, in those conversations, and, you know, I have no problem with this bill, and I'll do whatever the chair feels, and I'll support that. But there may be some other ways to word the language to show that we're having that conversation.
You know, and if we run out of time, I think you've gotten the sense that I think most of us, you know, could vote for the bill just like it is and be pretty comfortable with ourselves. But there is an opportunity, you know, there's a short opportunity now, and there's a longer opportunity as it traverses this building to, you know, talk, because I just don't want to see this bill die, never get a hearing in the Senate, you know, because we haven't signaled that it's important that this gets resolved this session. So
can I do one?
Yeah, Representative.
Very short. I do want to commend you individually for doing what was very difficult, which was to have a vote at the Department of Forestry. Okay. Having sat through and listened and watched the last number of years, the consensus process was painful for some of us to watch. So the fact that you were able to change basically a culture that had derived over time, which I don't think was necessarily the expectation, it just kind of inched that way. When anyone has to stand up and make the decision that now we're going to start building a new culture about how we do things, it is very, very difficult. And so I commend your efforts and strength of your character, and the fact that these are some of the things that I had anticipated and expected to happen when we didn't have the bill last time. And to see them finally happening is good. I wish it had happened a little earlier, but everything in its own time. So I do want to thank you for the vote.
Thank you, Representative Robart, very much.
Okay, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to chime in and say, I'd vote for this right now. With respect to what you're going through and what you're trying to balance, I appreciate the process. There's nothing about what you said that I find objectionable, except that you are in a difficult situation that I believe at some point the legislature puts its foot down and makes policy that you can then work with. I don't think it negates any of the other interests that you're talking about. But I said this before on the other bill, just to remind us, these are tough times. This economy is broken. We need jobs. And we have a responsibility to replace those timber receipts. So I don't think it's an ugly or dirty word to say that the number one priority of these managing this forest is timber production. I have no apology for that whatsoever. And anybody in this room that creeps back on either side is not of the debate, the old debate, the clear indiscriminate clear-cutting is what somebody's after, or that lockup is what we're after. That's not what we're after, so please let none of us go back there, because we've got a chair, we got people here that want management, and they want balance, and that's what I want. So I think this kind of policy is responsible, and it doesn't negate. I appreciated very much the very, very, very long speech that my representative friend here made about all the other needs of the forest. They're there, and he understands them, and you understand them. But there's nothing wrong in this climate for Oregon leveraging what we have. It doesn't mean that we just start indiscriminate cutting, but we leverage it. We decide when we can cut it. We decide when it's time to have revenue coming from state lands to pay for schools, as Representative Wingard. We decide, but it's about leverage. And if we don't start wisely leveraging the resources we have, I was reminded of this, and I'll give one other point, and I'll stop. It has nothing to do with forests, but it has everything to do with this point. In the 80s, there were some very powerful senators representing the Northwest, and they were from both sides of the aisle, and they dug in and said Bonneville Power is going to be regional preference. We're happy to share our resource. We're not telling you when and how, but it will be Oregon and Washington first, and California and anybody else second. And we've been able to leverage that resource as a result of that. That's the kind of leadership we need here and from our congressional delegation when it relates to forest. Thank you.
So I have one question for Marvin. In these conversations about, which I support, trying to increase harvest levels and board feet, it's something that we heard at hunting night, and I promised them we would be taking some action and some other bills I think we're going to be able to. Is there anything in these activities that construes that the replanting must occur so quickly after a regeneration or a clear-cut harvest? Because those of us who hunt know that that's where the animals get their nourishment and their health is from being able to eat there. Is there anything that forces us to get so quickly back into a replanting phase that we can't work on habitat and forage and nutrition, because I've heard some assessments it's maybe our driving it that it causes us have to spray and get back into the production so quickly.
Yeah, Chair Clem. We've had those discussions too with some of the deer hunters and others. There is a driver, and that's we do have to meet Forest Practices Act requirements, which. Representative Krieger can probably quote it better than me, but the harvest and stand does has to be have so many trees per acre that are free to grow within 3 years, I believe it is, and that is a state law right now. The point taken by folks in terms of how the harvesting we do affects browse and herbicide treatments and things. In general, when I've been out on our properties, we don't hit those clear cuts as hard with herbicides as you might find in some other properties. And we tend, particularly in cases like when we're trying to reestablish western red cedar and some other things, we tend to rely more on tree shelters and things like that to help along. We are in conversations with the deer hunting folks right now to see if there's additional enhancements we can do around those harvest areas to improve on browse, and I do think that's important for us. But we are driven by the free-to-grow requirement.
Sure. And it sounds like because of Oregon Forest Practices Act, the private sector also is driven in, so we have to at some point figure out, an ecosystem service type of option for habitat provisions and some way to help facilitate that. Okay, thank you. With that, I think I will get on. And we have more time, obviously. It's way past our 10 o'clock, but session isn't until 11. I don't know if I'm interfering with people's schedules on the committee. If you need to leave, feel free. But we've got several more folks to go. This has been important work, and I wanted to let it go on somewhat freely. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Ray Wilkerson, Dick Scouten, and Barbara Wilson. About eight more after this. Ray, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ray Wilkerson, Oregon Forest Industries Council. I'll be quick. I've got written testimonies being passed out. First, I'd like to say that only a very few members of OFIC actually purchase state timber from state timber lands. and therefore have a direct interest in this legislation, but we have a very strong and unified position in support of this bill because it's been developed over the years. This bill, as indicated earlier, has been before the legislature before, but we do believe that it's appropriate for this policy decision to be made in the way the bill would indicate. The reason is that for that is we don't believe that it makes sense for the state to have two forest management policies. And basically, the primary policy is the Forest Practices Act, which we believe is doing its job and protecting the environment and public resources adequately. There was a number of comments made earlier today about some from people with the same position that we have on this bill about industrial tree farms being kind of a pejorative term. And, you know, we would kind of disagree with that. If any of you would like to go out and do a tour sometime and we'll show you what an quote-unquote industrial tree farm looks like, we'd be more than happy to accommodate you. I think you would see that the Forest Practices Act is doing what it's intended to do, and there's the perception that there's something harmful or damaging from that type of management is just not the case. Assuming that the Forest Practices Act is doing what it's supposed to do, does it make sense for the state of Oregon then to have a different management plan on the lands that they directly manage and create the implication that there's something lacking with Forest Practices Act provisions? So that's the primary reason why OFIC as an association has a strong position on this. Just a couple more comments. I think what this issue really cries out for is some hard-headed cost-benefit analysis. The costs are pretty easy. We've already heard about them today. Dave Ivanoff calculated that based on average stumpage prices in normal markets, the gap between what could be produced on these lands and what's currently being produced, which is 130 million board feet a year, costs the state and the counties $42 million a year. That's the cost. I've attached to my testimony an economist analysis at the back page that gets to the issue of jobs. Currently in this market, of course, those jobs probably aren't forthcoming, but we will get out of this cycle and the markets will come back. And economists can calculate pretty accurately how many jobs are created by per million board feet of additional timber harvest. And just doing the simple math, 13.2 times 130 is 1,700 jobs. So when the markets come back, if this change isn't made, we're sacrificing 1,700 jobs. So those are the costs. The benefits are harder to quantify. Dave Ivanoff and others mentioned some of the big differences between the management, industrial management versus the state's management. There's the longer rotations. There's the wider buffers on streams. There's the different approach to the Endangered Species Act, which, by the way, is not legally required. The state and private landowners have the same legal obligations under the Federal Endangered Species Act. So at some point it would be instructive, I think, to really understand specifically, you know, why those factors create this huge gap. You know, what, you know, does it, and it, and as a, the benefits justify the cost. If you're going to have a riparian area, you leave trees 200 feet away from a stream rather than 100 feet away from a stream, what are you getting for that extra, those extra trees and in terms of benefit to the fish or habitat, and is it really worth the cost? So there's probably not time this session, Mr. Chairman, to do that kind of hard-headed kind of drilling down, but I think that would help the legislature really understand, you know, the basis for the choices that have been made and whether or not the legislature wants to intervene and give the department some direction to take a different course. I guess I'll just finish by stating the obvious. There's a lot of frustration in this building about the mismanagement of more than half our forests, which are owned by the federal government, whose fate is decided by people who convene 3,000 miles away from here, and our inability to do anything about that. These forests, you got the legislature does have, you're the ultimate decision maker. So I think it's only 3% of the total, but, you know, $42 million and 1,700 jobs is not insignificant. So with that, I would take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Dick.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Dick Scouten. I live at 6105 Southwest 148th Avenue, Beaverton, Oregon. I'm County Commissioner representing the Alloa, Beaverton, and Cooper Mountain area, roughly 130,000 some folks. I want to touch on a couple of points which I don't cover in my two-page document that I'm leaving with you. First one is in terms of I should also give you some brief background. I grew up in the Central Valley of California, so I have some deep understanding of rural farming life. My older daughter just graduated recently from Oregon State in hospital administration and is doing very well down in Orange County with the education that she's gotten. And number three, I'm currently an inactive member of the bar. And just speaking briefly on issues, the general principles of trust, the importance of looking at the beneficiary is I think very critical when you look at trust. Trusts are not intended to be frozen in time and ember. These things change over time, and how you put together the funding that goes out to the beneficiary changes depending on what truly is best for the beneficiary. I don't think what's best for the beneficiary, which is the state, broadly speaking, really the state of Oregon, all the residents have been paying into this forest, but in particular, Washington County has 50,000 some acres roughly in the Tillamook Forest and some other lands as well, is to put the thumb, frankly, and to really take it out of balance, to look at the timber as being the item that is the primary purpose. I think there's a mixture of beneficial uses that come to this forest, to the residents of Washington County, including recreational and habitat. And I think you need to look at that. Number two, in terms of the economics of it, there's been some pretty extensive work done by two professors a couple years ago that make it pretty clear that the benefits from an economic standpoint of timber harvesting have been, in many cases, overstated, and the values that come from the other uses have been, in many cases, understated. I think if you look at the history of capitalism in the last couple of hundred years, the fact is, this continues today, extractive industries have not been a kind place in the world of capitalism. I look at two examples in my own life. If you look at two mountainous regions of the world, both of which I spent some time in, Switzerland and West Virginia, the one has put West Virginia a great deal of emphasis on extractive industries, timber, coal, and industrial sands. They have ended becoming a colony of other places, have not benefited. A place like Switzerland has had a tremendous number of has had all kinds of uses, as well as timber. They've looked at all kinds of things in terms of their economic value. I think having a broad, beyond just extractive industry, is key to Oregon, and I think it's been key to success of Washington County. So just remember, putting an over-focus on extractive industry has not been kind. I think it's not a very good economic model, frankly. And I think you should take a serious look at the studies that have been done by Professor Powers and Rutter. Thank you.
And Commissioner, I mean, I will be happy to look at the studies. It's just my definition of extractive involves things that aren't renewable. And agriculture and timber production with replanting requirements and reharvesting opportunities, to me, is not extraction. It's not mining. That's far slower to replace it, you know. And so I think that's where my quarrel is going to be. Is I believe this is a renewable industry. I think there are old growth and other places that are treasures that should not be touched. But I believe that, generally speaking, most of our timber is not about extraction without replacement. It might be extraction, but it's replaced.
Well, instead of being correct, I think might not have been the best choice of words, but I think when you look at if you're looking at basically the raw materials and so forth, without, that has not been a good place to be. I think the success of Washington County does not hang on that. It hangs, I think, on all kinds of industries that look towards knowledge base, and we're looking at attracting knowledge base workforce. And that kind of a workforce is not going to be benefited by a huge forest just to our west that can provide many, many uses. But to put the thumb just on timber production is not going to really address those needs. And we look at our state park. We only have, until very recently, we had no state park to speak of. Now we have one that's about 1,500 acres. That's pretty small for a population of a half a million folks. and for a metro area of actually, if you count Clark County, about 2 million folks. So I don't see that we have a great excess of state parks in our county, and I think that that the 50,000 acres can have some real value in addition to being, I'm not saying that we, I'm not arguing for shutting the whole thing down, absolutely not. But I think to put the thumb on one use, I think is not ultimately a wise economic decision.
Well, I will be happy to work with you. I'm on the Ways and Means Subcommittee with the State Parks Department, and I've got other bills that have to do with creating areas of critical concern where people can recreate. But I own a business in the knowledge world, and I grew up in the natural resource world, and I worked at in the knowledge world for a natural resource company for a number of years. And it is neither here. It's not one or the other. Our urban-rural divide is not going to be further exacerbated when I'm involved with it. And I believe that there need to be places for people who work hard and create the knowledge products of the future to recreate. But there are also a need for people who live in rural areas to be able to still stay there and work and not have to move to town, in order to feed their families. And we're, again, this is not an easy issue. It's complicated, but we're going to have to find solutions that don't rely on urban folks having playgrounds and parks. Representative Gilliam must speak.
Just a quick question. I'm a point of information. What's the name of the park you referred to?
The Stubbs Stewart Park, State Park.
Where is that?
It's just north of Banks, about 10-12 miles. It's a park that opened up a couple of years ago. It's a little over 1,500 acres, and that's really our first state camping park in Washington County.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Commissioner, for coming too. We do respect your time and your opinions. Barbara.
I'm Barbara Wilson, and I live in Beaverton, and I am one of Dick Scouten's constituents. I won't repeat what Dick has said and also what Samantha has said, but please know that there are hundreds of thousands of people in Oregon that totally disagree with this bill, and I'm sorry they're not here to talk to you about it. I've had a puzzlement, and perhaps you can help me with this. My husband and I spend a lot of time in the area of the Tillamook Forest in the Clatsop Forest because my son lives at the coast. And when my son and I hike and we're on a high elevation and we look out over the Tillamook Forest in the Clatsop, these forests are now so heavily forested or deforested. They have been clear cut. And if you travel Highway 26, you can see the clear cuts. So when we start talking about increased logging or reversing the priorities of what's important on these state forests, I'm wondering, what do these people want? Every single tree to be cut, would they then be satisfied? Because there's a lot of logs coming out of those state forests now. You can see with your eyes the clear cutting that has occurred. Now, let me say this. I heard a remark on the Endangered Species Act, and someone mentioned the marbled murrelet and the spotted owl. The reason these birds don't live there is because there's no old growth, and they're dependent on old growth. So I didn't quite catch the comment on why this was not eligible for ESA, because if you allow the trees to grow long enough, they will be old growth and these birds will return. Did I miss the point of that comment? Because I thought that was very strange when that was brought up.
Representative Irwin.
The comment, I think, was made that they aren't considered part of that because there's enough federal forests and other lands there. The state forests make up such a small percentage of all the land that it's insignificant with regard to the range and having the old growth. The federal forest requirements about the federal forest having part of the recovery. They're the recovery plan, not the state or private lands. If there was a spotted owl on any part of it, they have to avoid. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But when it comes to the recovery of the animal, the federal government has taken over that responsibility.
Well,
and they do have 51% of the forest in our state, so they have a fairly large amount of timber to work on with regard
okay.
to that.
We're told that the spotted owl and the marbled murrelet are in serious decline, and the feds have not really been able to help those two birds. So anything that can be done in providing habitat for them would be a good thing. As I say, Dick Scouten has covered all the material that I was going to cover, and I don't want to take your time repeating that. But let me take this opportunity very quickly. I think I heard you say the governor has backed off on his opposition to H.R. 3.
Well, no.
Is that what I heard you say?
He never made a position known on that resolution. That was just a resolution. He offered to rescind his administrative appeal of the Western Oregon Plan revision.
Okay, but somehow that was related to H.R. 3.
Yeah, we had a H.R. 3 introduced, and what I was saying was that I decided, since the committee had already spent 3 hours on the topic, not to have another three-hour hearing on that topic when the governor has already withdrawn his opposition
okay.
via...
Let me say really quickly, because I know you're...
Please.
I'm horribly, horribly disappointed that the Democrats have a majority in the House, and that we have a Democrat. I mean, I am a Democrat, but we have a majority in the House and a Democratic governor, and somehow H.R. 3 passed this committee.
But it actually hasn't even been scheduled. What I was trying to tell you is I did not schedule it for a hearing. It's not going to be heard nor passed. But
okay.
I'm a co-sponsor of it, and I'm a Democrat, and
yes.
we are a diverse party. And I respect your opinions. I know I respect the emails you send me on saving the Metolius. We agree on that one.
Okay.
But you know, I'm going to have to respectfully disagree on some of these timber issues.
Okay.
But thank you for coming.
Thank you for the Metolius.
We'll
thank
see. We've got to get it passed. Come at 3 o'clock, come
okay.
at 3 o'clock today to land use. You can help me on that one, Barbara.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bob Van Dyke, Marcia Dennison, and Tom Wolf. I received emails for House Verdict 372. We go through them all. Just got a bunch of emails. Some of those 100,000 have been weighing in.
I think I've been there before. So.
Bob?
Great. Chair Clam, committee members, thanks very much for the opportunity to speak today. I'm going to talk briefly in my capacity as an employee of Wild Salmon Center and then add a couple comments as well for my broader participation in state forest process. I work for the Wild Salmon Center. We're an international nonprofit focused on conserving the best salmon runs. We're a little bit different than some organizations. We don't focus on places where the runs are dwindling, but instead where they're strong now. And that's the reason we're interested in the Tillamook and Classic State Forests. There's some really rich salmon runs there. To be short, we're concerned that increased focus on logging would jeopardize, increase the risk for some of those salmonids, and I imagine Mr. Wolf might address that as well. So we oppose 3072. We also think these lands are particularly important given their location. I passed a map out to you there, and you'll see from the map that they're the only significant piece of public land on the North Coast. So for residents of the North Coast and the Portland metro area looking west, like I do living in western Washington County, that's pretty much the only choice for to get out on public land. So they're important for recreation, but they're important for habitat values in that area, too. We can't rely on the federal lands in those areas like you can in other places. So we stand firmly against this bill. To change hats briefly, as an observer and participant in state forest processes, over 10 years now, numerous committees, as an individual, acting as an individual with the board, I want to describe briefly what I've seen happen, what the board's been doing. So last session, there obviously was a bill that said, board, you know, get off your seat and act. And believe me, I've suffered through some misery of consensus-based process at dozens of Board of Forestry meetings. So you said get moving. Well, November 2007, following that nudge, the board said, okay, let's pick some targets for increased harvest. But we're not just going to start doing that. Department, go and look at that. Come back to us. Tell us, what are the trade-offs if we do that? So the department went and did that. And it took them a year to get that done. They said two things. Look at increased harvest and bring us a new species plan. Because right now there's a habitat conservation plan that binds the state. And so they would like to get rid of that. So the board said, bring us a species concern plan. Bring us an assessment of a higher revenue potential. So the department goes away. They come back a year later. Last November, no species of concern plan. They just couldn't complete it in time. Not enough capacity. And then on the harvest side, what they found out was that there's actually 30% less available on the forest than they thought. So less timber out there, no species of concern plan. This is just last November. During that whole year in between, there was no chair for the board, you'll recall. So the board said last November, I think quite reasonably, finish the species of concern plan and bring that back to us. And also do an assessment of what these modified harvest levels are going to mean for wildlife. And that's due now. That's supposed to come in June or July. So the department's scrambling to get that done. I think it's a model of a deliberative process that includes a broad sector of people. If you look at the people on the Board of Forestry, there's no conservation leader. There's several people who have large timber holdings. And they've been making all these decisions by consensus along the way. So I think, I guess my point here is that I hear from you, and I believe all of you, obviously, you're earnest when you're saying we're trying to find some center on forest policy out there. And this bill doesn't help you get there. Supporting the board in a deliberative process would help us get there. Making the state forest primarily focused on timber production, putting that in the language, I don't think that gets there. In fact, it takes the Department of Forestry out of the conversation on state forests. Because they can, I just think that the department won't have credibility and the board won't have credibility if the main thing they're governing, these state forests where they have the most control, is focused on timber production. If they're seen as a collaborative place where people can come together and try and find a real center, I think then they will have some credibility and there'll be things like this Federal Forest Land Committee will have a chance of actually working. But I don't think you're going to see conservationists at the table. So thank you for indulging me. I'm very sensitive to that, and I'm eager to find a center in forest policy. I feel like we've got on one hand the timber industry approach, which is quite focused on certain economic values. That's fine. That's who they are and what they do. And then you've got the NEPA-centered lawsuit filing conservationists, and there's not really a center there. And what I hear is frustration from you about those conservationists, but I'm not seeing details about what that center looks like. And I think that's what the board's producing. And if I may, Representative Roblin, I appreciated you saying it'd be good to see the costs. And I think that's where the board's getting now, is to be able to say, here's the benefit we get of an extra buffer, and here's the volume we lose. And we're getting close to being there. So thank you again for your time to comment today.
Thank you for your comments, Bob. Tom.
Chair Clem, committee members, my name is Tom Wolf, the Executive Director of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited. Let me preface my comments with I'm a sixth-generation Oregonian. My great-grandfather, great-great-grandfather, grandfather, father have all worked in the timber industry at one time. As a school teacher, we could not survive in the early parts of our childhood if my father hadn't been a choker setter working in the Tillamook and Clatsop State Forests out of Seaside when we were growing up. So I understand the need for timber harvest for the economy of the coast. As the brother of school teachers, I understand the need for the school systems in the coast to get economic salvation sources from timber sales. I understand that. But having said that, Trout Unlimited does oppose House Bill 3072 because it's not a balanced effect. We feel we are very concerned
by this action that would take management out of the hands, allow the Senate to dictate what the Board of Forestry does. I'm, you know, over 10 years ago, there was a bill that passed by some well-meaning people that I opposed that disallowed the use of bait and hounds in the hunting of cougars and bears, and I thought that was the wrong approach because it took the management of those animals out of the hands of the agencies. And by doing this bill, you're doing the same thing. I feel that, you know, I haven't always agreed with the Board of Forestry on how they've managed the forest, but I think they've taken a balanced approach. And lastly, when we talk about economy, let me talk about the economy of fish runs of the North Coast. Currently, one of the largest runs of salmon in Oregon, if not the largest, is the fall run of Chinook on all the Tillamook streams and the Halem. That literally, when the fish are strongly in late September and October, you can walk across the Halem Bay and Tillamook Bay on boats without even touching the water. So many people, it brings millions of dollars into the economy of Tillamook, Garibaldi, Wheeler, and the Halem, and all those little towns that not only use guides and rent boats and use equipment, but they use hotels, eat at restaurants, buy gas down there. So we have to be very careful in emphasizing one source of the forest use in the Tillamook and Clatsop that we don't cut back on the other our other sources of economy. So we need a balanced plan. We need to keep it in the hands currently of the Board of Forestry, and we do. Let me close stating once more that we oppose, Trout Unlimited opposes House Bill 3072. Thank you.
So I won't share it now because of time, but you've given me a particularly interesting idea, Tom, that I'll share with you afterwards.
Okay.
With your reference to the bear and cougar thing and how not how that's going, but you know, there's an approach that's being pursued that might actually bear some fruit here.
All right.
Hi. Can't see. Hey, thanks for keeping a quorum to hear what we have to say. First of all, before I say what I was going to say, I'd like to talk to Hamptons.
Could you identify yourself for the record?
Marcia Dennison, Pacific Rainforest Wildlife Guardians. Okay. Now, while these gentlemen have been going to meetings, I've been chasing logging trucks. It's a lot more fun and exciting. And I've learned that Hampton illegally subcontracts to Tevan Brothers, who is an international log export, and that's against the law. Tevan Brothers takes doubles of logs to Washington. Little more than half the logs from our state forest are milled in Oregon. If they'd stop by the mills instead of blowing their doors off at 60 miles an hour and have them cut a little bit, that wouldn't be illegal. But it is illegal. And as much as half of most of these logs are not marked, and if they're not marked, they don't have to be scaled, and the counties get no revenue at all.
So are you in favor of this bill? I'm sorry.
I'm against it.
Okay.
I'm against it. And I believe there really is a deficit for the counties, and it's being stolen by log smugglers. And the state refuses to investigate this. The logs have to be branded so that they have to be scaled. And when you see trucks going by with one orange dot on it, they're not supporting Oregon State. They're stealing logs from the counties, and the county's not getting revenue for that. Every log has to be stamped.
Okay, thank you for your testimony.
All right. Besides, that's not my testimony.
Can you go really quickly? I've got five more people.
You let Tim Josie talk for an hour and a half.
Close.
Yeah, I know. I'm one of those two-minute people, right? Okay, here we go.
I think you're at like four already, to be honest, but I'm fine with another couple more.
Okay. Oh, God bless you. All right. The greatest permanent loss law is a terrible bill. It will allow for our drinking watershed. By the way, I'm from Vernonia. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm familiar.
Very well.
They destroyed their watershed following the Forest Practices Act, and now they drown in sewage. About every 10 years, they have 100-year floods because the whole valley overflows. And so I know what I'm talking about. It will allow drinking watersheds to be destroyed.
Hillsborough High School swim team would have an empty pool in the summer. The streams would be dry up, leaving salmon high and dry. I've seen all this stuff, okay? Flood control would be ruined. Cattle drowning. You ever hear cattle drown? It's really a horrible thing. And homes destroyed. Public forest management must be conducted to benefit all Oregonians, especially fish and wildlife. It was their homes before we invaded it. A healthy forest is a diverse data forest from which we may reap the benefits forever if we do not clear-cut it all, leaving nothing for the future. Clear-cuts make lousy recreation. Prudent long-term ecoforestry with hiking trails, which don't take up that much space, bird singing, fish swimming, rodents aerating, and enriching the soil over the span of time ensures a bountiful harvest throughout time. Don't cut the future short. A no vote is for prudent management of the public trust. A yes vote is just following the timber money. Thank you.
Thank you, Marcia. Thank you, gentlemen. And Marcia, I'm sorry. Ivan Maluski, Jeff Hickman, Mike Dewey.
Go ahead and start. Representative Clem, members of the committee, for the record, Ivan Maluski with the Oregon Chapter Sierra Club. Thanks for at least keeping a skeleton crew here and continuing this hearing.
Yeah, I did not give them notice that I was going to go long either, so that's my fault. They had appointment schedule, I'm sure.
That's all right. I'll try not to echo things that have already been said, but I'll just make a few points. You know, the Tillamook and Clatsop State Forests are obviously more than just timber production areas, and they provide a lot of other economic values, I think, to communities in Oregon. And oftentimes, because there's not a percentage, you know, with timber receipts, there's a percentage that sticks with the counties. You don't get that with some of these other values, but I think that we do have to recognize some of the important economic and social values with these forests as they are. So, you know, we're obviously in opposition to House Bill 3072 today. Some of those values: drinking water, rich salmon fisheries, diverse recreation opportunities, including hunting and fishing. And I think if the Board of Forestry manages things well, we may be able to see increased carbon sequestration. And there is a possibility, I think, in the future of economic value for counties associated with that if we do it right. We think that this bill is going to undermine other state investments that have already been made, including for salmon recovery through the Oregon Plan for Salmon. We think that's a significant consideration. And we think that the intensified clear-cutting and road building that would result, I think, from this bill would ultimately increase landslides related to roads, erosion, which impacts water quality and fisheries. And ultimately, those kind of repairing that type of damage increases costs to states. And you don't often see that because it's sort of a disaster scenario, but I think if you look about every December, there's intense flooding and landslides that occur up in the North Coast, and I think that we can associate at least some of that with logging practices, and so we're concerned about that on our state lands. I guess I would just urge you, the question was posed earlier by Representative Van Orman of why is this necessary, and I would say that it's not, and we would urge you that to give the board a chance to strike the right balance. Several of the board members, including the chair, are newer. They've all had an interesting background in that they've either had support from both the timber industry and the environmental community, or they've received sort of neutral kinds of ratings from these different constituencies. And I think that says a lot. I think that when you've got, I was listening to the radio this morning, and Mr. Wilson, who's with the Woodworkers Union, who's on the board, said that he opposes this bill. And I think that tells you something significant, that this board needs a little time to kind of sort these issues out. And they do reflect a fairly diverse constituency that can kind of do some of what you're talking about. Last thing, I just wanted to respond to a couple things I heard. I heard the Association of Oregon Loggers say that part of the reason they support this bill is because they want to get, essentially, what I heard is low-cost logs because of depressed prices from state lands. I think that if we're going to, as stewards of state lands, which ultimately you all are, I think we have to be careful. If you were a private timber company, you'd be holding on to your timber and selling it at a much higher price. I don't think at this time it's a wise decision to be selling timber at a much lower price in these current market conditions. Lastly, Mr. Ivanov said that he mentioned some stumpage rates that were based on 300 plus per thousand board feet. That's not what they are right now. They're somewhere, depending on where you're at in the state, stumpage is about 40% lower than what it was anticipated to be because of the market. So again, we're looking at very low stumpage, $200,000 per thousand board feet. If you're going to be planning an economic future around that, you're looking at the more you cut, you're actually getting less because you're not doing it, timing it right. Lastly, I did want to enter into the record. Representative Wingard had mentioned an Attorney General's report from 1992, and then the Marvin Brown, the state forester, had mentioned another one from 2006 relating to the question of existence and nature of the fiduciary relationship between the Department of Forestry and the counties. And I do have a copy of that 2006 letter from Attorney General Hardy Myers to Marvin Brown. I'd like to enter it in the record if that's possible,
sure.
Mr. Chair.
Yep.
I've got several, at least got enough copies for you all here, and
okay.
I think we can make some for the others. But essentially says that it's important to note that there's really not a clear link in terms of law, in terms of that fiduciary responsibility. There is a lot of discretion of the board. I think it's just a simple, short one-pager here, and I think it'll reveal a lot, and it is the most current legal opinion from the Department of Justice on the books. So thank you very much for listening today.
You bet. Thanks, Ivan. And Dave, if you want to come on up, I think we lost Mike Dewey in the mix. And so this must be Jeff.
Thank you once again for sticking around late.
You bet.
My name is Jeff Hickman. I've been a fishing guide in Oregon for 7 years and recently come on board with the Sierra Club to represent Oregon's hunters and fishermen. And we strongly oppose Measure 3072. We urge you that it's not the right thing to let the economy and let the legislature come in to manage these forests. Let the Board of Forestry do their job. Let them use science to manage the forests. To reiterate what Bob Van Dyke was saying, these are some of the last really healthy runs of salmon we have in Oregon. And it's crucial that we protect them because we don't have many of those around. It brings a lot of money in, and it's really something special. People come from all over the country and even outside of the country to come fish Tillamook Special Rivers for salmon and steelhead both. So I don't want to bore you with repeating everything that's already been said, but this is really, really important to me and hunters and fishermen throughout Oregon.
I can assure you, I hunt in that forest and I fish in that forest. Yeah. And the Halum, particularly, is my favorite, though I just get skunked every time. But
we don't need to talk about that one.
Trask. So, but when I go there, I got to tell you, a clear cut will help on the hunting side. I'm not saying I'm not debating the fishing side, but it'll help on the hunting side, both on the nutrition and forage side and on the ability, well, actually, just particularly on the nutrition and forage side. So the animals, in a deeply covered forest, it's hard for the deer to get undergrowth and underbrush. And so, I've got to go back and get a science degree to understand it all. Someone over here, I think, has one. But there's differences of opinion probably about us, between us hunters on the issue of the role of a clear cut in nutrition and therefore opportunity for me to get a little venison in the fall.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
There is certainly a difference between healthy thinning and clear cutting, and there's, as far as aesthetic values for hunters, there is a wide variety of what people prefer to hunt in, but there's a wide variety of forest practices.
So trust me, my wife and I argue about the aesthetics of clear cuts routinely.
Yeah.
Dave.
Okay. Chair Clem, members of the committee, my name is David Moskowitz, and I'm here today to represent the Audubon Society of Portland, Pacific Rivers Council, and the Native Fish Society. These organizations support the implementation of the current plan, the current definition of the greatest permanent value, and these organizations are opposed to House Bill 3072 for a variety of reasons. I've passed out written testimony from the Audubon Society. There's also a sheet that is a combined page from the Wild Salmon Center and Pacific Rivers Council. I'd like to go back because some of the testimony today talked about some of the history behind this landscape. The fires are always, that's always kind of where we start. Privately owned land and logging caused fires in the 30s and 40s, and then subsequent salvage logging and road building that really took everything the fire left. And the legacy of the fire, the salvaging and the replanting effort are that you have legacy roads and you have culverts that are from that time that are still failing today. And that was largely the failures of old roads and culverts in the Salmonberry watershed were responsible in December of the loss of the railroad through that canyon. The old roads and the culverts are still things we're dealing with on this forest, and that's why everybody from Fish and Wildlife to private timber companies to the watershed councils are trying to restore streams in this wonderful fabric of watersheds in the North Coast. Also, we took most of the large wood when we salvaged after the fires, and so there's a very great deficit of large wood on these streams, and that the wood is what regulates the sediment that comes down. Landslides are a part of the natural system, but in a complex forest or even an average managed forest, when there's landslides, you have different sized rocks and trees all come down at once, and that's a good thing. But landslides and clear cuts generally deliver just the sediments, and there's not the large wood to manage that, regulate that, and that's some of the legacy of what we're facing in our watersheds. The last legacy of the fires was that the great replanting effort, which was truly a citizen's effort, and you can go out there now and you can see that these trees that are growing up are part of the fabric of many Oregonians that come into this building or throughout the state. But it's important to remember that we use trees that were not resistant to Swiss needle casts. We used Douglas firs from the Cascade Range in southwest Washington. And as a result, these trees are not growing back at the rate, they're not growing with the same rate of productivity as you would expect from a Douglas fir that is resistant to Swiss needle cast. So and a reason I bring all these up is because it's important to realize that as the department has looked carefully at the inventory of standing trees and their growth rates on this forest, that we've come a long way back from where we were in 1999, 2000, and 2001 when we adopted this plan. And that is when the mythical number of 279 was put out there. And Dr. Sessions from OSU, it's kind of it's OSU day today. And I think it's too bad there aren't more beavers running around these woods because we'd have a lot better habitat out there.
That's true.
But in any case, we've come a long way from that because the foresters, the state foresters, have done on the ground inventories now. They've really proofed the stocking levels, and they've measured the growth. And we have, as Bob Van Dyke mentioned, we have fewer trees growing at lesser rates, and that rate it's going to vary. During droughts, we're going to have slower growth, higher showing of Swiss needle cast. When we have wet seasons, we're going to have better growth, less Swiss needle cast effect. So that's the background there. And I think that we just can't, we have to come to some agreement, and I think the board is trying to get there with this best, with this good information, that we may not get to these targets that everybody is holding sort of sacrilege, excuse me.
Freudian slip.
Yes. I think it's also important to realize people talk about what's possible to harvest from this forest under the Forest Practices Act, as if the Forest Practices Act was a completely sound management tool. I was in this, the first time I came in this building was in 1991, and we changed the Forest Practices Act, and it took the whole session. It took Paul Ketchum and I from Audubon were sequestered with the Forestry Department and all the industry up at Silver Falls doing the rulemaking. It took 3 years to do after the 91 bill passed. It was excruciating. The FPA, while it still is maybe a standard compared to some states, it doesn't, and the EPA has made the statement before the Board of Forestry, the FPA does not protect water quality. And so we're having problems with temperature and sedimentation, dissolved oxygen, and that continues to harm our watersheds and fish. And to use that standard on a public resource like state lands is just not appropriate.
Have you wrap up, David?
Yeah, okay.
Still to get in.
Yes. I wanted to just show, somebody said, why do we need this bill? And I pass up a map, and I'm sorry I didn't have more of them. But you may be able to see some of that. The orange, this is the Wilson River watershed, and the orange represents the proposed clear cuts over the next 40 years. There's a lot of orange on this map, and I'll try to get copies to everybody. There's a lot of timber harvesting that's going on. I was out in the Nahalem on Friday, my first day of fishing for the season, and you know there's logging trucks coming out of there all day long. It's I think almost all of it is coming off of state lands at this time. And that's both conifers and alder that are coming off. But it's the forest is being harvested. And in fact, the rate, or the million board feet, have gone from 1995 to 2000, went from 80 million board feet to 160 million board feet. That should have created, according to the jobs data that Mr. Wilkinson passed up, of 13.7 jobs per million board feet. The Forest Service has 12.7 jobs. These are old analyses. That should have created anywhere from 1,000 to 1,700 jobs. The fact of the matter is, with that doubling of the harvest rate, the number of jobs in Tillamook and Clatsop County in that five-year period rose 24 jobs. And even if you assume that those jobs went, that there were 24 jobs or 12 jobs created in every county, all 36 counties, that would only have created 422 jobs statewide at that rate. So those numbers are simply not there. And it's just, you know, the market conditions will change, but our timber industry has changed permanently because of mechanization. There's fewer jobs per million board feet. So it doesn't serve anybody to propose that this cutting, increased cutting on these lands, will raise the revenues and increase the jobs at the levels that are being set. I think that the department is on a course. I have been at the Board of Forestry a lot, not as much as Mr. Wilkinson or Mr. Van Dyke, but that board is struggling to do the right thing for Oregon. I think they have good statutory guidance and really believe that House Bill 3072 is not needed. And I really appreciate you staying around. I very much would have liked to have had Representative Wingard and Representative Schaffler and Gillum here to hear this, but very much appreciate it and happy to take any questions.
You bet. And as I said, it's my fault. I didn't give people notice it'd be going long, and they just asked because of other appointments. We just need to get Brock. Did you have a question? We need to get Brock. Why don't you start coming up, Brock?
Yeah, I just had a comment about the economy.
Okay.
Hood River County owns its own timberland, and they haven't had a sale in the past year.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Last but not least, Brock Howell, Environment in Oregon. I didn't see anybody else. So. Come on up.
Trying to get all my ideas. Yes, thank you, Chair Clement, members of the committee that are remaining here.
They call me Claire. Usually someone does. Claire Chem for some reason.
Did I say Claire?
No, but someone usually does, and I kind of miss it.
Yeah. Sorry, Claire.
Happened in a week. Clement. Please.
I'll try and make this quick, given the time and session has already started. Again, I'm Brock Howell with Environment Oregon, and I represent 30,000 members statewide to protect clean air, clean water, and open space. And I would like to give a short background on my background since this is the day of Oregon State University. My grandparents graduated from Oregon State University. They're both beavers, and I'm proud to come from that heritage. And he was actually, my grandfather was in one of the first classes of the aeronautics program. So I have a proud Northwest heritage with that. I also come back with a proud tradition of being one of the original Oregon Trail homestead editors in this state. And so there are politicians, there are road builders, there are foresters, and there are farmers that are my relatives in the past, although now I don't know who all of them are at this point. So I do care that we continue to have a strong forestry industry in this state and that we continue to manage our forests in a wise way. My concern with HB 3072 is that it doesn't look at forests in the long term, given our new technologies and new policies that will come into place and the existing market conditions that we have currently. in addition to the substantial concerns that we have for habitat, for water quality, that have already been stated pretty well by others before me. And so I would just like to highlight some of the things that when we're considering what the highest and best use of forests are, of where new jobs or rather our new economy may be coming from forests, which include ecosystem values, carbon sequestration, and possible FSC, Forest Steward Council certification of the lands. And my concern is with each of those things, if we set the production of timber as the primary purpose of our state lands, is that all three of those would be undermined in the long term. For a short-term idea of the next 2 years as we get out of our economy, where our timber sales haven't been as high as they should be, we're not getting as much money for them. So to increase the board feet coming out of our state lands makes little sense in the short term. And then in the long term, if we are to increase production, we're doing it at the exact time when we want to be shifting our forest economy towards FSC certification, towards ecosystem service values, and toward carbon sequestration. So I believe the proper balance is to continue to let the existing agency process proceed of how we manage our state lands, not pick one siloed value in our forests, but consider in the long term that we might be able to return to our counties new value and higher value through other means. So thank you for your time.
Just one question. So is your thought that if there is a legal obligation, let the courts rule that instead of having the legislature try and address that part of it? If there's legal obligation to have timber production of the highest value and we don't acknowledge it legislatively, just let the courts keep ruling that if that's their decision?
Chair Klim, as I understand, the legal obligations right now is to return the highest value right now towards the counties, broadly defined under trust law, which the 2006 decision by the AG has defined as pretty liberal of that interpretation of what that value is to be returned. So in how the courts are to determine this, I think really the question is should...
My question isn't what the AG thinks or I think or you think. I'm trying to get, are you comfortable with the courts being the final decider of whether the trust relationship has been broken?
Chair Klim, I do not believe that, given the AG's opinion and trust law, that my personal opinion on the matter is...
I don't have an opinion.
I'm asking the courts
to decide it, basically.
I don't believe that the courts will be the ultimate decider of this issue. To me, what the question is whether the legislature should be interjecting itself into an agency process.
I understand your opinion. I wanted to ask your opinion on the courts as a decider. It sounds like you don't want to venture into whether they should or shouldn't be, but you just don't want us to be. And I understand that.
No, I don't want the courts to be the ultimate decider. I mean, that's the preferred alternative, but I don't think they will be either.
That's fair. Question. Thank you, Brock. Sorry, I didn't mean to get back and forth with you, but I am interested in this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my thing there is, what do you see as the purpose of the legislative branch as opposed to the executive branch if you say all the decisions should be made by the executive branch, i.e. the Board of Forestry? I see the legislative branch as one of our main functions is to help direct the executive, whether it be by what we give them to pay or the statutes that we put forward that help them carry out their duties.
Chair Klim, Representative Roblin, I agree it is certainly the responsibility of the legislature to set up the agencies with the proper framework to be able to do the rulemaking and executive process. I believe that at this point we have set them up adequately and that they should be considering what the highest value is in the long term towards counties, towards our citizens, and that at this point to be interjecting into that process to pick one value out of many is very concerning to me, in that it's interjecting into the agency process such that they will become adverse to having a full discussion of issues, and so it's politicizing the agency rulemaking process and their execution of the rulemaking, which I think at this point the best approach right now, given future value of forests and being able to take into account more factors than just timber in the long run, is that we should defer to the agency until it is clear that, and I agree that it is wise that the agency be able to state the reason why they took a certain procedure and they weren't able to meet the board feet goal, and to analyze whether that decision-making process is happening adequately and their justifications are adequate.
I think, my take is, I was a commission chair. There was one point where I threatened to resign if, the governor's office kept involving itself in our business. My one problem with this issue is that if I really wanted to weigh in, I probably should have tried to get in the Board of Forestry. I understand that. But the commissions are like their own branch of government. In fact, it drives this particular governor crazy, I think, that they've got as much latitude, particularly in their rulemaking. The process you're describing, that time frame has to be before the end of this session. And that's what the amendment that I'm going to be bringing. It's not that I disagree that it should be the process, but smart people can make decisions more quickly than they have. And that's where I think we may be in disagreement. Not that they shouldn't do it, but the outcomes should align with the plan goals, and it needs to be done before we leave here. Thank you very much.
And I can assure you I'm interested in the amendment. And
I'm sure you are. Thanks, Brock.
Thanks.
All right. With that, thank you, Representative Roblin, for staying with me. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3005 and adjourn our meeting of House Ag Natural Resources and Rural Communities.